Welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 10. I'm here. I'm David. I'm here with my main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I've been good this week. How about you, Dave?
Well, I'm an old lady. I'm under a blanket. I've got, you know, it's a little cold in Sydney, I find. I mean, so much for Australia being hot.
Oh, poor
freezing.
Baby.
I know. And I'm snuggled up. I've got my Deadpool t-shirt on. I think I'll battle through.
Can we just point out, it's t-shirts and shorts weather. Like, realistically.
Well, I have a t-shirt on, Stuart.
Yeah, under about three cardigans.
And I have a blankie as well. Now, here we are on episode 10. I just want to mention our last episode with Chuck Dixon, so far our most popular. And we've had quite a number of downloads, probably twice the normal amount. I've already mentioned to Chuck, who was astounded and happy for us. So, I mean, I think that's fantastic. And I also want to mention to anyone who's new, go and join the Signal of Doom Facebook group.
Yeah.
I've also got a Twitter account as well. But the Facebook group is where I post everything up, including some articles and stuff that I find, which I, you know, think people would enjoy.
Yeah, so just search Signal of Doom on Facebook. It's the first thing that comes up on Google.
It says Signal of Doom comic book podcast.
Yep, easy to find.
Yep. And also, my Twitter account's RedLantern2051 if you want to get to the personal in-depth, the mind behind the show, Stu. If you want to really get behind the curtain.
Yeah, you know. If you wanted to do that, maybe.
Yeah, if you wanted to. Yeah. She's like, he doesn't. He doesn't want to do that at all. Now, Stu, kicking off the show, first thing, final Wonder Woman trailer. I watched it, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, but I enjoyed it more for what they didn't put in the trailer.
Yeah.
We still haven't seen the villain, and I love that.
No, I want to be surprised by however the villain is and whatever he looks like. And
exactly.
Everything.
Like, yeah. We know it's Ares because of leaks, but we've never seen him. We don't know what he's going to look like, what he does.
I hope he looks epic. I hope it's like a really full-on CGI, like skull face or something.
It's
so
good that we haven't seen him. It's so rare for trailers to hold back this much information.
I've heard people complaining, and I think some of it's just very concerned Wonder Woman fans about the marketing, but I think it's starting to pick up. I think just recently they started off a little bit like medium hot, and they're just starting to ramp it up towards their June release.
Yeah, I mean, I think they waited until Guardians come and gone, because that was kind of a big hurdle for DC to kind of battle through.
Yeah.
But now that Guardians has come out and everyone's seen it, we've moved past that.
Yeah.
We're now into a bit of clear air cinema-wise.
It's going to be good timing if it comes out in early June, which I think it does. Is it like June 5 or something?
Australia, it's June 1.
June 1. Okay, cool.
I think in the States, it's June 2.
How pumped are you? I'm so pumped to see Wonder Woman having a live-action movie. Like, I'm genuinely excited for her. Like,
yeah, so am I. I'm really looking forward to this movie.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. And, I mean, just to recap the trailer, I guess it had a little bit of new content, but it was mostly playing off... It was just a really well-cut-together trailer, and it sort of played off stuff we've already seen, little snippets, you know, a bit more of her and Chris Pine.
Yeah, I think total there was about 4 seconds of new footage.
Oh, that's all.
Okay. That's it. The rest was rehashed what we'd seen.
It's going to be interesting to see how much of the film is flashback or is all the stuff with her at the start. Do you know what I mean? And then it
Well, we kind of know that there's going to be a war at the beginning.
Right. Do you think parademons or anything will invade Paradise Island?
Well, that might be part of... Themyscira's history.
Yeah.
Because we know we see in Batman, Justice League, we know there's a battle between the Parademons and the Amazonians. That takes place well before.
And Wonder Woman has said, did you say in Batman Superman, I've fought monsters before?
Yeah, exactly. So she's fought Parademons.
Man.
But we know there's flashbacks with her as a child, with Hippolyta?
Yeah, Hippolyta, her mother. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether she sees the sword in the...
Mm. How about the bit with the lasso?
Yeah, that looked very cool.
I thought that was really cool. That was a new bit of the trailer, wasn't it? Was that new footage?
Where she actually gets it. Yeah, that was new.
Yeah.
Her using it.
And she wraps it around him, though.
Yeah, that we've seen before.
Oh, okay. I love that. I thought that scene was awesome. I love the lasso, man.
Yeah, so do I. I wasn't expecting them to pull the lasso out this early. Like, it didn't make any appearance in BVS.
Yes, it did. She lassoed Doomsday.
Yeah, but it wasn't glowing, it wasn't powerful.
Yeah, but it was the lasso. It was glowing, man.
It may as well have just been rope at that point. Like,
dude, wasn't it holding him down for a while?
No, not really.
Didn't it cut away? And she was holding on to the Doomsday with the lasso, like trying to hold him in place, I think, from memory, wasn't she?
Yeah, but...
It was pretty cool, man.
It was a weak appearance for the lasso. Like,
it was a good appearance of Wonder Woman, though. I think that was a good...
It was a good Wonder Woman title.
Yeah. Oh, look, dude, I'm just pumped. Like, just the thought that, a couple of years ago, was it about a year and a half ago now that Batman Superman came out? Something like that? And
something like that.
And I mean, I remember being in the cinema so ill with flu medication, so pumped up.
This is a running theme. Yeah,
and I was,
you drugged up in a cinema.
I was seriously that
holding
sick.
On to life.
And I was clinging on to life. The words to my girlfriend, I don't care if they have to put like the IV drip in me. I'm seeing this movie. I was like, I don't care if this is the last thing I see, as long as I can get there. And I was, but I remember, I know the movie had its ups and downs, but I was so high in life that I was enjoying it. But the bits with Wonder Woman, I thought would, they were magical to me. And I think her in her own
rare
movie,
highlight in a pretty average movie.
Yeah, exactly. True. Very true. And I think that was, a lot of people have thought that. Now, so moving on, because I think we can talk so much about Wonder Woman, but let's wait till we get there. And I think we should definitely do a Wonder Woman trade or something coming into the,
yeah,
into the movie.
We've got 3 weeks. Yeah. 3 weeks and then it's out.
Dude, Greg Rucker, Wonder Woman, man. That's so, it's that simple, dude. It's lock and load with Greg Rucker on Wonder Woman, man. I'm telling you.
Easy.
Now, something that I thought was pretty cool, the trailer dropped for Defenders Season 1.
Yeah, very cool. It actually dropped about 3 hours after we recorded our last episode.
Yeah, it was about a week ago, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, a very, very cool looking trailer.
Very slick, man. Like, I thought it was cool. Like, and it was poking fun at itself.
Yeah, there's a lot of humor in there, especially the interactions between
Iron Fist
and the other guys.
Yeah.
That was great.
They sort of take the mickey out of Iron Fist a bit, which is appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, when they were filming this, they kind of had some feedback about how Iron Fist was.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the whole ball.
Definitely the weak sister out of the Netflix.
Yeah, and I think they're using him as like the weird brother to the group.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's not really sure what he's doing.
I mean, I know, shout out to David Hopkins at Hideous Energy, who's a huge Iron Fist fan. I think most of us felt, if not a total misstep, it certainly wasn't of the caliber of the Luke Cage, the Jessica Jones.
No, I mean, like we said when it came out, it's not a bad show.
No.
It's just not up to the standards of the other three.
The high standards, yeah.
The other three main shows.
But I got a good vibe coming out of this trailer. I thought it seemed interesting.
It looked great. And Sigourney Weaver's finally showing up. She looks great.
Did I see Elektra in the trailer? Was that Elektra at one point?
Yeah, Elektra's in there. So Stick.
That's cool. And Stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, see, I didn't expect Stick at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't been following the casting news or anything. I really like Stick. The actor who plays him is amazing. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, he was really fun.
And he's going to kind of be their sort of trainer or guide, it seemed like, or at least.
So we know that each of the four stories, the four main defenders, all have a common enemy.
Yes, the hand, basically, isn't it?
No, it's above the hand. It's Sigourney Weaver's character.
Oh, okay. She's like the Puppet Master.
Yeah, because if you think back to, and it's also how they got their powers.
Oh, really?
So Jessica Jones and Luke Cage were both kind of experimented on and with.
Yep, that's true.
By the same company that spilled the chemicals in Daredevil's eyes.
Oh, really?
And that company is connected to Sigourney Weaver in the same way the hand is connected to Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, right. Okay, that's interesting.
So she's kind of been pulling the strings with, as far as a villain goes.
Yeah, okay.
There's rumors that Diamondback is going to be making an appearance as well from Luke Cage.
Okay. He was in the Luke Cage show, wasn't he?
He was the main villain,
Yeah, he was good.
So once Cottonmouth died, it was Diamondback who became the
And
villain.
He didn't get killed in the show, I'm struggling to remember.
No,
he
didn't survived. Die.
Okay.
I love that. Not that that's going to stop anyone because Elektra died.
She's
back episode one. So
well, that's what I thought. Yeah, Elektra had a death scene, didn't she?
Yeah, but remember the last thing we saw of her was they put her into that.
That's right.
Resurrection sarcophagus kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we saw in the first kind of little snippets, the lid kind of being pushed from the inside.
Yeah, I remember now. Yeah. Oh, dude, I'm down for that. Do you think there'll be a Frank Castle cameo at any point in The Defenders? Or you think it's already too jam-packed?
They're just about to finish filming
his show.
His solo show. Yeah. So could well be.
It wouldn't stun me. It's already going to be a pretty it's going to be a pretty full show. 8 episodes with those, you know, the leads already.
Yeah, it's already pretty crammed. And when you've already got supporting characters like Rosario Dawson's Night Nurse and
who was having a sexual relationship with Luke Cage. I know she'd had one on the show, but there was it seemed
yeah, yeah. And there's also a couple of other shared characters like Jaren Hogarth, who's been with Jessica Jones and Iron Fist.
Yep.
So there's a few kind of shared links that they could use to bring these guys together. We see them pair up early on.
Yeah.
Iron Fist and Luke Cage kind of clash early on and Jess Jones get introduced to Matt Murdock in the interrogation room.
That's right, he comes in as the lawyer. That's great.
As the lawyer, I loved that.
Yeah, I think that that's really clever, and I think that is so out of the comics.
Mm.
You know, like him coming in as the attorney.
Yeah.
I love
that. But
also
the pair with the Heroes for Hire finally happening.
Oh, yeah. You've got to team up. That's fan service is desperately needed, especially because I think Iron Fist probably suffered because it didn't have Luke Cage in there to help him in his own show.
Yeah.
I feel Luke Cage is a stronger character. You know what I mean? Like he's.
I think Luke Cage has been a better handled character so far.
Yeah.
There's potential for Iron Fist to be amazing. Cool, I'm looking forward to seeing Colleen Wing as well. I think she'd be really cool as a...
No, definitely.
Another side character.
Basically, I'm trying to get too excited for trailers, but I watched this one out of thinking I better watch it for the show because I knew you would watch it. And then I came away genuinely pumped, you know?
Oh, yeah. When I saw that it dropped when we were here recording, when I got home, it was, got to watch that.
Exactly. Now, in stark contrast to how excited I am for The Defenders, when I'm on record for my views of The Inhumans, I consider them just the most annoying subset of the Marvel Universe. I haven't even watched the trailer because the images of the Inhuman royal family, to me, just look so ordinary. And they can't even get Medusa right, who is the only good Inhuman, in my opinion, other than the dog. But I don't know. To me, this Inhumans thing is just one gigantic waste of my time as a human being on planet Earth.
Okay, I wasn't sure we were going to disagree on anything this episode. And I
it wouldn't be the single dimmer we
did. I think we might have found it.
There. Well, state your support of the Inhumans and this preposterous show and brainwashing by Marvel to try to make us like the Inhumans. I refuse.
Okay, so... First thing, Medusa's hair is pre-CGI, and they've said that. There is no special effects on that photo.
Oh, okay, so there'll be special effects in the show.
Yeah, it's heavily CGI.
Well, good.
Just a wig as a placeholder.
Well, why are you putting that as a promo picture?
I think it's really early days, and they just wanted to get the word out there.
Well.
If you'd watched the trailer, it actually makes a lot. It's a brilliant.
Is it good? Is it a good trailer, honestly? I honestly haven't watched it.
There is basically no footage.
Oh.
It is the Inhumans logo, and you're kind of zooming out. You see a little bit of Attilan in the background. They kind of zoom out.
The city
that the Inhumans live in. And you hear Maximus talking.
Maximus the Mad. I know.
The Mad. Yeah, the Madman. Cast Ewan Rheon,
who
he was Ramsay in Game of Thrones.
Remind me who Ramsay is. I've watched like the last three seasons of Game of Thrones. I didn't watch the start.
Okay. So he was the guy that was Bolton's son.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. The evil bastard.
The evil, evil bastard who got eaten alive by dogs at the end of the last season.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly who you mean. That actor is also, if I'm thinking he's the right guy, he's the actor from Misfits.
Yes, he is. He was
he's a good actor.
Two of the seasons of Misfits.
Yeah, I really like Misfits, and I've watched the early seasons. He's actually a very good actor.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, so he's Maximus. That's good casting.
Which I'm really looking forward to.
That's good casting.
The rest of the casting is Ken Leong is playing Karnak, which is cool. I liked his But the rest of them are kind of unheard of. They're not.
To me, you've got to get Medusa right. She's the only Inhuman I think that most people know. I mean, other than the dog.
Oh, I think Black Bolt.
Black Bolt.
Everyone knows of Black Bolt.
Well, Marvel fans do, and I guess. But she's cool as well, man.
Medusa's I also think Black cool Bolt's character. Probably harder to do because you can't speak.
Talk. Is he telepathic? No, he's not. Is he?
No, but I think
he's got a tuning fork sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's to control his own power.
So,
but Medusa is telepathic.
Oh, okay, right. I like Medusa.
Yeah, so she connects with Black Bolt and is his voice.
Oh, that's how they... Okay, that's how they have a relationship. It's not just all on bits of paper.
No. No, and it's not like a Chinese Whispers type thing.
I only know them indirectly through their appearances and other things, but I have a soft spot for Medusa.
I've always been a huge Black Bolt fan.
He's cool in the Illuminati and stuff. I just haven't read much of him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I know he's an adored character. Where's the dog? I like the dog.
Lockjaw.
Is he in it?
He is going to be in the show.
I was going to say, if Lockjaw's in it,
they know he's in the show, but because he's so heavily CGI...
They couldn't put the dog in.
And then this is pre-CGI. All of this is pre-CGI.
Fair enough.
Which is why Medusa's hair looks like a fake wig.
Okay.
And everyone was saying it looks just like a fake wig.
I just look terrible.
It doesn't look any good.
I was like, is this Medusa's hair?
Ignore Medusa. Look at the other guys... Look at their faces. That's what you're going
to
see.
So they don't really have a lot of content yet to show anyone. From
no. I mean, they were months away.
And apparently the first two or three episodes are going to be shown on IMAX. That's how they're shot. They're designed to be shown
on IMAX. Yeah, they're kind of doing a twin release. So the first episode or two is...
Is this going to be on the same network as Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Is it all connected?
I don't think it's on the same channel.
Oh, okay. Right.
I think it's a separate network. This network is also doing the other spin-off with, like, Squirrel Girl and...
Oh, the New Warriors thing you mentioned.
New Warriors and...
Okay, because I think ABC has Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. over in the States. But I don't know who's doing... I'm pretty confident they have it, but I don't know who's doing this Inhumans. Do you think it's going to take off, man? Like, honestly, because Marvel have been trying to force-feed Inhumans to readers since the last 6 years, and I don't think it's been particularly successful. Like, they've really tried to make you care about the Inhumans, and people are just like, I prefer the X-Men. I prefer the X-Men a lot more.
I mean, yeah, look, Inhumans has always been second tier to the X-Men.
Big time.
I don't think anyone's ever disputed that. It's
And they're desperately trying. And I don't blame them because I know that it's a property they own, but it hasn't worked. Do you think, Stuart, as a movie TV connoisseur that you are, do you think this show has legs? Because I don't think it has legs. I think this will be a cancellation. I think this will, at most, 2 seasons.
I mean, look, for my money, because it's Marvel...
Mm.
And they haven't really put a foot wrong so far.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they don't have access to the X-Men.
Yeah.
I think this gives them a lot of options to do a lot of crossovers, a lot of cross-promotional with the Marvel Universe as well as the TV Universe.
Okay. So you think this could be a springboard show?
I feel like it's more a springboard than a standalone.
But do you, like, I mean, I wouldn't describe Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as really grabbing the zeitgeist. I think it came out with a lot of positive press out of Avengers, and it's never really been more than a second-tier show.
Look, it never really took off in the same way as something like Flash for DC.
That's exactly what I'm saying. If you compare it against the CW shows, I wouldn't say, I'd say Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a tier down in terms of popularity and quality.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still a decent show.
Mm.
Like, I keep up to date with the...
It's okay.
I'm quite enjoying it. Close to a season finale now, but... Mm. Look, you're right, it never really hit the mark the way the Netflix series did.
Exactly. I think the Netflix series...
That's where they really shone.
I totally agree.
And I think it's more because they've been able to focus what they've been talking about. Mm. With ABC... And Inhumans is on ABC.
Right. All right, okay. I would have thought so, considering how much work they put in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the Inhumans as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is when you've got this giant series, you've got 20-something episodes.
Yeah, a lot of
filler. 22 or 23 episodes. A lot of that's filler.
Yeah.
But when you go to something like Netflix and you've got 8 or 10 episodes,
yep.
You get a concise beginning, middle, and end in a story.
And can I say it's street level on Netflix? Like, the stakes are smaller. You don't have to... You don't really... It doesn't hurt the Netflix shows that don't really overlap with the big Marvel Universe, you know, context. The cinematic universe.
No, I mean, the MCU is there. That's their big money. That's their big ticket item.
Yep.
Anything that happens in that kind of filters down through the TV shows. So,
yep.
You know, they talk about the incident that happened, which is the Chitauri
invasion. But it's a throwaway line.
It is, but it's kind of so you know they're in the same universe.
Yeah.
But there's no direct consequence the other way around.
Exactly. Nothing that Elektra has done is impacting on the MCU in any way.
No, but when Hydra fell in the movies, Hydra fell in S.H.I.E.L.D.
And I think that was very awkward for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because apparently the actors and all that didn't even know. That, you know, in Cap, Winter Soldier, when Hydra's revealed, the S.H.I.E.L.D. revealed to be infiltrated.
Yeah.
Like, that was a surprise to, like, obviously, I guess not the showrunners of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it was a hidden secret.
It was to the cast and crew, yeah.
And I think, though, in a way, that made the show a bit, like, it was almost a bit of, it's like, we're called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and all of a sudden, like, they had to really radically switch what they were doing.
Yes, but I think it worked in the sense that it was more like a behind-the-scenes look of what happened in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Because
you see Cap, you know, tackle these giant helicarriers down to the ground and
big
set pieces, but then you don't see what actually happens to S.H.I.E.L.D. after that.
True.
What does Nick Fury go back to? What does Maria Hill go back to, you know?
Mm.
And it's this look at S.H.I.E.L.D. where they've found out they've got a bunch of moles in their organization. And
does Maria Hill turn up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? In the show.
We haven't had a cameo with Maria Hill so far.
See, I think that's a shame. I think for that show to really have been supported, they needed a few cameos like that.
We've had Sam Jackson.
I bet it was a walk-on, walk-off from Sam. I've seen it, actually.
And we've had small parts from people like Lady Sif from Thor.
Yes, she had an episode, yeah.
And the Enchantress had an episode. And there's little crossovers like that when a movie's about to come out or has just come out.
Hmm.
We kind of get tie-ins.
So you think this show has legs to run, like, until this whole Marvel thing's over?
I mean, look, I'm not expecting the best quality TV I've ever seen.
No.
I'm expecting a decent, fun show like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, okay.
So expectations are set reasonably low.
Fair enough. I'll be honest. I out of a sense of obligation to the show, to Signal of Doom, I'll watch the first episode of Inhumans. And I tell you what, it better spellbind me because I just have never bought into the whole concept of the Inhumans. I find them annoying. And like I do, I just genuinely, you know when something just doesn't click with you personally? There's an Inhuman in Secret Empire, and I'm like, of course it has to be Inhuman. Because we just have to keep on getting Marvel trying to force me to like the Inhumans. It really, it's like being force-fed a certain breakfast cereal that you don't want to eat. It's like, give up already, Marvel. Like, your Inhumans titles bomb. They've bombed for years. They've bombed even when you've, like, doubled down on them big time in the last 5 years. Stop telling me that I have to love Inhumans and putting them in all your stories. They basically suck. You know?
See, I don't mind them. I'm not that extreme in my views, okay. I think.
All right.
I think it's an interesting mechanic where when you're a mutant, you grow into your powers.
It's so much cooler.
At some point, you will just grow into your powers.
Mine came out in puberty. That's basically when I acquired my claws and my adamantium.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You grew adamantium. That's better than Wolverine. That's impressive.
I had one up on Wolverine.
You don't often get to say that.
I didn't even have to go to the Weapon X program. I just had it already.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it was good. It saved me time.
I kind of like the mechanic that the Inhumans have where it's forced on you.
Yeah, it's with like the Terrigen Mist. Chrysalis that you go into and then pop
Out. No, it's the idea that you have to be exposed to a Terrigen crystal. To undergo Terrigenesis.
But you have
to. You can't be born an Inhuman and live a life as an Inhuman.
But aren't you latent?
You have a gene in you, same as the X gene.
Right, okay. And it gets triggered by the Terrigen.
It gets triggered by this crystal.
I thought it was a mist.
Same thing.
Same thing.
It's a mist made of the crystal.
So you can be latent if you never encounter that Terrigen.
You can be 80 years old and then. Right. You know, come into contact with a Terrigen crystal.
Yeah.
And you gain these powers.
I'll tell you honestly, I don't mind the idea of it all. The fact is that I read Marvel Comics for so long and they were so much of a bit player that it's like they really were a bit player. You could read a lot of Marvel and never come across an Inhuman. And just the way they've gone from that to like every fucking second character in any side story is an Inhuman now, I find it annoying.
Yeah, but I am a sucker for the royal family side of things as well.
Yeah,
it feels very Greek gods or...
Yeah, it's high level.
That kind of thing where you've got this set monarchy in place.
Well, I like Medusa. I've always liked Medusa. I mean, she turns up in Fantastic Four and
Medusa's stuff, been very cool. She's been linked with a lot of other...
Matt Fraction in his run of Fantastic Four used like characters like Medusa really well. And she's beautiful when done. Well, like Mike Allred's art. Like, she's stunning. You know, that's when I started to like them. And, I mean, bits and pieces like Hickman using them in Maximus the Mad, that's where I know I'm from, in Avengers run. Like, I don't hate all that kind of stuff, Black Bolt and Illuminati. I think when it's more your everyday schlocky Joe suddenly turning into an Inhuman, that's where I get annoyed.
Yeah, but, I mean, they did a run where that was the same for X-Men.
Oh, I'm sure.
And all of a sudden you got a run of teenage kids all showing up with random powers and it was all X-Men.
Yeah.
Marvel just, it's their way of promoting their own products. I don't think it's anything we can get rid of.
No. But, I mean, I like to stand firm. I won't be buying any Inhuman titles, Marvel. I'll watch the first episode for the show, and if I like it, I'll continue. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. For me, it's always minimum three. I will watch the three episodes of pretty much anything.
All right. You know what? For the show, for the Signal, I'll commit to three.
It's a big call.
It's a big call. But they better get that dog and scream.
Lockjaw is going to be there.
I want to see Lockjaw and I want to see Medusa. And Black Bolt better bring his A game this time.
See, I'm such a big Black Bolt fan.
Okay.
I'm a sucker for that guy.
Well, that's all right, man. Now, Stuart, turning and changing gears here a little bit, we've got something that I thought was amazing, the Blade Runner 2049 trailer.
Yeah, we've seen a teaser a month or two ago.
Okay, I don't think I'd even seen that. I don't remember seeing it. This is the first thing I've seen. It blew me away. I mean,
it's very cool. Isn't
I'm
it?
An unabashed Harrison Ford fanatic. Okay, like I love Harrison.
And this was when he gave a crap. This was good Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and he's turning up. He's not funny, but I like Ryan Gosling as well. And I also have always in my imagination is that cityscape of in Blade Runner. You know, of was it LA or whatever? That's always even when I'm writing, I'm always thinking
that.
You know,
Ridley Scott did such a good job with that cityscape.
And the director on it, I'm not sure of his name, but he's the director of The Arrival and stuff.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got nothing but talent. So
yes, I was a big fan of Arrival. I loved that movie.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was visually stunning. I thought it was a bit of a snore fest, but I could appreciate it was a good movie. And I thought it was good acting, good story.
Yeah, see, I think I'm a little biased because one of the main characters is a physicist, and that's what I do.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, because you're a science guy over there, aren't you? You know, whereas I'm a vigilante audience. And there
yeah,
wasn't
whereas you're Wolverine plus three.
Yeah, yeah, there wasn't any Wolverine character.
There was no Wolverine cameo.
But no, it's a well-made movie. And I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know what else to say about this trailer other than I would suggest listeners go out and watch it. And
it looks very cool.
You get a real sense of what's going on. Like, it just feels like, bring it on, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know whether we're going to get an answer to the kind of cliffhanger Blade Runner question that everyone wants to know.
Is he a replicant?
Is he a replicant?
See, I'm so stupid. I didn't even... Like, when I watched... The original Blade Runner I watched was the narration version. I had it on VHS. It's the version that everyone hates. And that was the first one I had. Well, it was the only one that was available. It was the one that was on the TV or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I never even had that question in my head. Ever. No, never had it. Never
How
even...
How do you get through Blade Runner and not think to yourself...
Just didn't.
Could he be a replicant?
Didn't think of it. Because I was such a Harrison Ford fan. I thought Harrison Ford was just doing his job. And... You know, and there's a lot of stuff going on in that movie, and I watched it as a young guy. Like I wasn't really old.
I mean, for those out there that haven't seen it, it is an older movie.
81 or 2.
81, yeah. Go out and watch it. It is still stunning.
It's a good movie. It's slow. I would say that. I hope the sequel's a bit faster, because I always felt the original drags a little bit in the third act.
Yeah, I didn't. I really didn't mind that, though.
It's a great acting, you know, Rutger Hauer. And the Sean Young, it's got some really good acting in it.
Like
it
is.
It's a good movie. It's a very, very good movie.
It is really good.
Totally bombed at the box office. Was only ever a cult hit.
Mm.
It's
but now a massive hit.
Huge hit. Hugely influential.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Velvet Underground, the people who reckon they went and saw them formed a band.
Yeah, you know? It also feels very like Shawshank. Shawshank Redemption,
great,
which was an absolute bomb when it first came out.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know that from the reputation.
But now, with the reputation and the viewings it gets
now... The funny thing about Shawshank is I saw Morgan Freeman the other day on Graham Norton.
Mm-hmm.
He said the big. He said the exact thing. And he said, the big reason? It was the title. No one knew what it was.
Yeah, it is a weird title. Say. Yeah.
But amazingly, when that movie came out, even on its first lease of life as a video, everyone loved it.
Mm.
You know, I just remember thinking that was one of the best movies I'd seen.
Yeah, and I think with Blade Runner, when they started doing the... Because there's about 8 different cuts of that movie out there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth watching. Watch the narration.
When they first came out with, like, the new director's cut,
yeah,
fans loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. And it is still a gorgeous-looking movie.
That's good. See, I missed all the stuff about the unicorn and everything. Like, it was over my dream sequence. It was over my head as a kid. I watched it as an adult, with the thought in mind, I guess I don't care, really. Other than is it really a question that Ridley Scott had?
It's a question the world had, Dave.
Is it?
Everybody wants to know if he's a replicant.
I've heard Harrison Ford say he didn't care. And I tend
to
agree.
I feel like Harrison Ford doesn't care about a lot these days. But
yeah, I agree with Harrison on
this
one.
Barely cares about landing a plane all right.
People talk about it like it's the greatest mystery of all time. Like it's like, did we really land on the moon? You know, or is it all a hoax? I was unaware that was even an issue until recently. My girlfriend is pretty confident it's a hoax. So there you go.
I've got plenty of things I can teach your girlfriend then, and that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, gave her my general response, which was apathy. I mean, what can you say? If you question everything to that level, you're questioning it a lot. You know what I mean? If you're getting to, did we really land on the moon? It's like there's a lot of other conspiracies that start to really formulate in my mind. Like, I'll give you one.
Yeah, but the difference is, you know, we landed on the moon if you've read a book. Like, there's plenty of ways to disprove that theory.
I agree with you. Now, Stuart, I'm going to pitch one at you. I agree we landed on the moon. Okay, I'll give you that.
I'm glad. It's kind of like agreeing we have gravity.
Do I think the government puts things to control our brains in the water? Probably.
I'm with a no on that. It's a firm no for me.
Okay, here's one for me. I, for a long time, and I've stated this as, I think, an accepted fact, I believe that aliens did land, that we do reverse their technology, that they, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We may have them in prison and stuff like that.
No.
See, I'm a big yes over here.
No.
I even, at one point, have you ever seen the show The Event? Have you seen the show The Event? Basically, that's what happens at the end of World War II. They land. I think the Russians get some of them and the US gets some.
What?
And I
You're
said
saying to, this like it's a normal thing to
no,
say.
No, no. The event is a TV show. I said to my boss, this is a clear example of them putting out product where they're disguising truth as lies, you know, or truth as fiction. Anyway. So that's just something. I guess that's a divide we have a divide. I believe that.
Yeah, and I'll give you the moon
landings.
Yeah.
I'll give you the moon landings. I have my questions about that, but I'll give you them.
I'm happy to answer any questions you have about the moon landings.
Now, my questions are more deeper than conspiracy.
There is definitive proof on moon landings.
All right. Oh, I'm not sure how he got here. I can't remember, but Blade Runner, is he a replicant, Stu? Yes or no?
See,
give me a yes or no, because I didn't even know it was a question.
I always thought it was a no.
A human.
I thought he was human because he could dream and the whole unicorn thing.
Right.
And now we know that replicants have a 4-year lifespan.
Well, Harrison's lived about a million years.
And he's coming back now and he's aged. And we've never seen a replicant age before.
I was going to ask you that question. Do they age? Because I assumed...
Well, they've got a 4-year lifespan because they would learn eventually they would get...
Like Rutger Hauer is at the end of that, isn't he? In the original.
Yeah.
So how are they explaining that? Harris is just the exception to the rule?
Well, apparently he's just not a replicant if he's aged. Or he's figured out a way... to surpass that 4-year lifespan.
Well, I'm betting with no. I didn't even know it was an issue, so that's how little I cared about it, that I'm just going with...
Too worried focusing on mind control and the war.
Yeah, I had bigger problems going on when I was a young child. Now, Stu, want to do a quick check-in here, box office report on Guardians 2. Absolutely enormous numbers, $441 million in just over 2 weeks worldwide, mm-hmm. with a pretty healthy US take. Something I want to say here right now up front, I think both of us did the... This is proof to me that The Guardians is critic-proof because, like, everyone gave the same review. Good, but not as good as the first one. Yep. But I knew there was such a lot of groundswell, positive groundswell. That hasn't hurt at all, and neither should it because it is pretty good and very close to the original. I think this deserves to be the hit that it is.
And as we said last week, the week before, you don't need to be a good movie to make money.
Oh, no, you don't. No,
you don't need to be good.
There's a lot of goodwill on The Guardians franchise, and let's face it, you know, I think that basically, I think a really good decision by James Gunn to stay inside the Marvel playpen. I think it's a wise decision. You know, he's apparently going to be coordinating the Marvel, the Cosmic Universe, your wheelhouse over there.
Yeah.
They really should bring you in as well. Maybe James Gunn should field a call to Signal Doom and get you on as a consultant.
I'm open. I'm open to that.
Hey, I'm open too. Guess what?
give me a call.
Give me a call, James.
Yeah.
Message to Signal Doom. We're available any time day or night.
Well, I wouldn't go that. I'm willing.
I am.
I'll negotiate.
Oh, okay. You'll negotiate.
I'm not giving it away.
I'm ready to beat it by 10%, James.
Oh. And like that, Dave is unemployed.
No, but I think honestly, like a lot of people were saying when he announced that he was going to do Guardians 3, people were saying, he's sticking too long with one franchise. He should branch out and do other things. I'm comparing to an athlete. Like Roger Federer walking away from tennis. You're a long time retired. You walk away from Guardians at this peak level, nothing you're going to do right after that individually is going to be the hit the Guardians is. Stay inside the franchise, build the franchise, make a ton of money, and then go do your movies.
Yeah, look, I don't think 3 movies is too long.
No, neither do I.
Like, look at all these successful directors that did a trilogy. Look at Nolan.
Exactly.
Look at... look at Star Wars. I mean...
Yeah. Well, Lucas is forever attached.
Exactly.
Until he got bought out.
Yeah, but like he directed that first trilogy of movies and then walked away.
Yeah.
Like,
true. Did he direct them all? I think he only directed the first ones, Stu. Yeah, he definitely didn't direct.
He wasn't the director.
He was hands on, though, is what
he was pretty heavily hands on.
True.
He was in there.
Yeah, and he was massively associated with the franchise long after that, too, all through the re releases and everything and the prequels.
Exactly.
I think, if I'm correct in saying, I think Phantom Menace may have been the first movie he directed after New Hope. I don't think he directed any movies in between. Obviously, he was a producer.
No, he has one of the smallest filmographies, yet one of the highest grossing directors of all time.
Yeah.
If not the highest.
He's got plenty of cash.
He made an exceptional call when he got the rights to merchandising for Star Wars.
That's amazing. It is honestly, it's a funny story, isn't it, of a guy who I think in the end got so sick of his own franchise and of the critics' opinion, but he's just done so well out of it. I think he made a really good decision to sell it off. I think it was the best thing that happened to that franchise. You know, in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's still involved in it. They're not
is he really
cutting
though?
Him out.
I don't think he's out, man. I don't think he has much say over much at all anymore.
he's still in there. Like, he still gets to participate. And yeah,
I've heard they shot down his story ideas and stuff. He put forward an idea for Force Awakens.
Look, they don't have to go with anything. Like, yeah. But he's still there. They can still talk to him and ask him questions.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, I mean, I still think the selling of that franchise to Disney was the best thing that's happened to the Star Wars franchise in 20 years. I think it was a massive... Look at the movies.
And Lucas did well, $4 billion. Oh, that's a pretty decent sum.
Mate, from a business perspective, I think it was a really masterful decision from all parties involved. He wanted to cash out. He cashed out. He got like $1 billion in cash and $1 billion in stock, something like that, man.
It was a $4 billion settlement. Yeah, I don't know how huge. Much of it he got. And then obviously half of it goes to tax, but...
How much do you think DeMorn might get those kind of numbers? DeMorn Blood of X on my book series?
Oh, easily.
I'm available, Disney. Call me and we can talk money.
You're going to be a busy man with James Gunn and Disney calling.
That's okay. I like to be busy. Now, Stuart, something funny I read. That you know when everyone loves something, there's always got to be someone... And I've been this guy who pushes against the grain.
I've also been this guy.
You've been this guy.
I've been this guy on this podcast.
Yeah, you've been this guy on this podcast before. And I mean, Ray, by the way, our listener Ray, who emailed in to correct you, he sent out his best wishes as well. He hasn't read all of Bane Nightfall, but he's just digging our podcast in general. So a big shout out to Ray. Now, Stu, this guy wrote an article on Esquire about Baby Groot is terrible and is bad and America needs to get over it. America is better than Baby Groot. And basically his article, you know, obviously it's slightly satirical, but he's basically saying Baby Groot is like the Ewoks of Star Wars and just the lowest common denominator, and we've all fallen for it head over heels, and we're fools. And, I mean, my response is this guy needs to get laid.
Yeah. look, Baby Groot is adorable.
Yeah, he's adorable.
He is harmless fun. Mm. And looking at what America's done recently with things like Minions...
I love Minions.
By far and away better than anything.
Baby Groot's better than Minions.
Everything is better than Minions.
Yeah. And look, I mean,
huge turds, better than Minions.
Well, look, I mean, I adore the Minions myself, but they've got nothing on Baby Groot. Baby Groot's got personality. The Minions just.
And the
sort
other
of
thing
like,
is,
you know,
this is a single movie. We've already seen him become teenage Groot. We know
at
he's going to.
Yeah.
Exactly.
True.
We're not going to see Baby Groot again. This is a one-and-done movie.
People love Baby Groot. When I was in Hong Kong, I went to the Hot Toys Global Superstore.
Yep.
And the girl I was with, my colleague, she couldn't care less about most comic stuff. You know what I mean? She adores Baby Groot and got one of the Funko Pop figures straight away.
Sure.
He's shot across all genres. This guy, I kind of think this is a writer who's got up and thought, I'm going to write a deliberately inflammatory article. You know?
I think at the moment, the word Baby Groot is just selling.
Yeah.
If you want clicks, put Baby Groot in the title of an article.
Yeah, we should. Guess what? Baby Groot's going in our title. You've just. And as an aside, by the way,
episode 10, the Baby Groot of issues.
Yeah. The Baby Groot doom. Stuart, you might remember I was sort of throwing out some bit of heat on Josh Brolin. Remember in a previous conversation, I was saying no longer he's not a leading man. Name a movie which he's made a lead in. Talked about his box office potential, like him as an actor. Well, on the flight to Hong Kong, I've caught the first half of, what is it called, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men.
Starring Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Very heavily. Fantastic. I've always liked Josh Brolin, don't get me wrong. Loved him in Men in Black 3, where he plays the younger version of Tommy Lee Jones, who's also in No Country for Old Men, strangely enough. So I'm going back on my own statements to say I endorse Josh Brolin to have a bigger role in, what was it, Deadpool as Cable?
Yeah, he's Cable in Deadpool.
Stu, I reversed.
And he's going to be in Infinity Wars as well.
If I could have called you, I didn't know he was even in it. And my problem is this. When No Country for Old Men came out, everyone said it's the greatest movie of all time. I put it on one night when I was really, really tired. And I made it through probably the first 30 seconds. And I kind of woke up at intervals during the movie. It's totally confused. Never really understood the story. Only heard, oh, it's the greatest movie of all time, and it's got the guy in it who was in the James Bond film. So, Javier Bardem. Now, and I sort of thought, well, I didn't feel it was the greatest movie of all time from my snippets when I woke up.
I think that's overstating it. I wouldn't call it the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah, I know, but people had a big rep on it.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. Put it this way. Watching the first half, I've only caught the first half because I, again, had to fall asleep because I'd had a very heavy few days.
Yeah.
I was entranced, and I want to find out how this movie ends. So I'm going to watch the second half of it later this week, and I'll report back to you, Stu.
The other Brolin movie that I really enjoyed was Sicario.
I haven't watched that, but that's on my list to watch
as
well.
If you haven't seen Sicario, I'll give it a watch.
No, I've got that on my list to watch. That's a movie that I think that's a movie where you really have to kind of, you've got time and you luxuriate in the movie, you know?
Yeah, you've got to sit there and...
No.
Again, it's got the collector again, Javier... No, not Javier Bardem. Who's a collector in...
But it's Del Toro.
Yeah. Del Toro is in it.
Very good actor.
Emily
I like
Blunt
him.
As well.
Yeah, no. Who else did you say?
Emily Blunt.
Oh, I like all the talent involved. Mm. No, I've got that movie as a to-watch. Problem with me, Stu, is you probably picked up on a little bit. Movies, I tend to get a little bit sleepy.
I have noticed a running pattern here.
Yeah, there's Michelle
you're
says...
You're either blaming the cold and flu meds or you're just straight up falling asleep.
Michelle says with me there's a 20-minute window. The 20-minute window is when she looks at me, is he still awake? There's the question mark. If I'm not making noise and not making comments and, you know, asides and chirping, she tends to think Dave's fallen asleep once again. I'm very old. Now, Stuart, turning to something, and I think this is a topic where I feel quite strongly, actually. Secret Empire obviously came out. I think we did the first issue zero last week.
Yeah, issue zero was last week.
Issue one this week we're doing. In between time, there was a Free Comic Book Day issue. I didn't get to Free Comic Book Day. I was in Hong Kong. There's a Free Comic Book Day issue we haven't got our hands on. But basically, in the context I'll give it is the controversy we all know about Secret Empire with how Caps are Hydra, Agent, blah, blah, blah. And it's been a big, big internet kerfuffle for some time. Now, my opinion is people were going in to get a copy of the Free Comic Book Day issue of Secret Empire just to then burn it as a sort of protest of what's going on at Marvel.
Yeah, and people were also burning issue zero as well. They were going out and buying a comic book.
So they're spending money.
They're spending money. Jeez. Just to burn it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's principles, I guess. Now, can I be honest, though? Look, people will do what they want to do. I understand that. We live in a free society. Okay, one of the privileges we have is that you could do that if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I think, frankly, it's a very ignorant move, and I'll say it's a symptom of a pretty bad culture where you're book burning. It's something to be very careful.
I can't think of anything stupider to do.
Mm, that's dumb.
Than just burning something. It doesn't get rid of it. We live in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
They are not affecting anything.
Yeah, you're not wiping the public memory or anything.
No, exactly.
This reeks
and
to
in
me
fact,
of entitled
they're doing it. I don't know if they're doing it ironically or not.
I'm sure some people
are. Because they're doing it to protest.
Dude,
the whole...
If I can think of some guys out there...
Nazi party Hydra parallels.
Some and, are, I think.
And the Nazis were quite... famous for burning a bunch of literature.
A lot of fascist organisations and far-right and far-left organisations and governments have been known for banning books.
Exactly.
I'm against censorship.
Protesting the Nazi and this extreme view by burning books, which is exactly what the Nazis would do.
I'm not really nailing my flag to the mast on Nick Spencer's Secret Empire because I'm frankly not that thrilled by it myself. I just think this is the wrong move to make. And I would say this, don't buy it. Don't give it the soundbite. Don't give it the 5 seconds it takes. Like, just don't buy it. Don't support it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
We live in a capitalist society. It's a market economy. Nick Spencer can tweet all day long about how we should all be reading Secret Empire, but frankly, people can just tell him to fuck off by not buying it if they want to.
I mean,
they're right.
Look, the problem is money talks.
It does talk, man.
And in Free Comic Book Day, it's the amount of copies that leave the store.
Mm.
That's what tells Marvel whether you're loving it or not.
Yeah.
So ironically, taking all the copies to burn them tells Marvel that it's been insanely popular because all their copies have gone from stores.
You know, yeah, it's stupid. What it reminds me of, Stu? In the 60s, at the peak of Beatlemania, probably about 64, John Lennon gave an interview where he compared Christianity to the Beatles, and he said, we're basically bigger than Christianity right now. This is the peak of Beatlemania.
Yeah.
It was an aside, Stu, in a conversation. John Lennon wasn't having a dig at Christ or at Christians. He was having a chat with someone he trusted that went into a magazine that then blew up in America big. And the Bible Belt were buying records of Beatles records and burning them in, like, pretty much public events. Like, DJs were having public burnings of Beatles records. It was the first time that the press, which loved the Beatles, went against them. And John Lennon really – it really changed his opinion of the media in general.
And, I mean, yeah, it shows how fickle society is.
Oh,
you can say one thing and it – gets this kind of extreme
reaction.
This
is John Lennon and the fucking Beatles at the peak of Beatlemania. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break already. Like, these people should be ashamed of themselves. Like, really? But they were hardcore Christians who really believed that John Lennon was disparaging Christ. Now, he wasn't. You know what I mean? He was having a conversation. He was saying, he was studying a fact. Beatlemania was massive for about 2 or 3 years. And he was just
Look, it doesn't matter whether it was true or not.
Yeah,
the fact is that he said this comment, not meaning to offend people.
No, he didn't.
It was a statement that...
I've even seen his backtrack where he sort of throws his hands up in the air and goes, look, you've got your apology. you know, I didn't mean to hurt you, but my fact still is the fact.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the difference with this issue is this has taken months of planning. Like, this isn't just a random aside comic book issue that's come out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they have been planning this for months that the Hydra would take over and literally the Cap
months,
is a Nazi. And
literally months. It's taken fucking forever.
Exactly. Like, this isn't a slow build-up or a quick aside comment that someone's made, you know, off the cuff that's gone bad. They've planned this out and they've had plenty of time to look at it and go, this isn't looking good.
I'll be honest right now. I think that I genuinely like Marvel, and I have great affection for a lot of the writers there, and I think in general they produce a good product. So it's a tough industry. I'm not really having a huge slam. I think they've probably got themselves in a little deeper than they expected with this whole Secret Empire. I think people have taken a little bit more seriously than what they thought they would.
Yeah, and then doing things like the whole getting comic book stores to dress up as Hydra is dumb.
I haven't heard from Marvel. I offer $20K. For $20K, I do it for a day. No one's come back to me.
The other thing they... So Marvel released a statement saying that you need to wait for their story to be finished before judging them.
Politely wait.
That is stupid marketing. Like telling them
it's just dumb.
That you're overreacting, calm down.
Yeah.
That's not going to help.
All that does is piss people off even more.
Exactly. Right
Especially people today, man.
The best thing Marvel can do right now is pull everything. Yeah. Stop it. Walk away. Have a month with nothing released and then come out with a comic book that says it was all a bad dream, and
they'll
they
never
woke
do that
up.
Though, man. No, see, I'm won't. The opposite. I'm the opposite. I think they've committed so heavily now. They've overcommitted. It's like in a war. They've overcommitted on this front. It's the Civil War II was considered, you know, not a success in terms of, I don't know how it did in sales, but definitely perception wise was negative. Okay, this I would say is even more on the nose. I think they've gone too political. I think it's backfired hugely. And unfortunately, the millennials who really like to get offended have really gotten offended on this occasion.
Yeah, they've got their knickers in a twist. Shut up sometimes.
Oh, I agree. The millennials, dude. I mean, let's face it. Sometimes you're like, seriously, guys, come on. Like, calm down.
Yeah, look, having said that, this is also the perfect opportunity for Marvel to do a refresh.
Yeah.
To cut everything and start it again, you can bring back all
Burn
these characters.
Burn the forest down and bring back the new guys.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's where they're headed. I think they're taking too long.
We knew that Nick Spencer's story was dragging out.
Nick Spencer and his long storytelling.
And
like, seriously,
it's barely paying off now.
Like, it's paying off, Stu, I would say almost exactly like we would predict. You know what I mean? It's like the painful, like, layer by layer in the school, like... This is nothing new. This is
because Marvel wants to get 100 tie-in issues and they just want the money.
I wonder, bottom line though, I think eventually the noise we're making, and I think we're fairly open-minded. We're more open-minded than some of the guys who are like telling Nick Spencer he has to go, you know,
absolutely
jump in a river, etc. Like, I think it does hurt. At a certain point, that outrage does hurt sales.
They've already shown that these sales are dropping. There is always a boost when you get a number one or a number zero title.
Sure.
That's been well documented. And Marvel did see that boost with Secret Empire.
Yep.
We knew there was a boost in numbers, but this drop in numbers is happening faster than what they've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting down to really quite low levels quite quickly.
And there's a long way to go on this event.
And there's a long way to go.
We're at issue one, technically.
Exactly.
And there's like eight or something.
Yeah, but between this and the tie-ins and Comic Book Day, and they've seen quite a few issues, and it's dropping quickly.
I'm getting so bored of even thinking
this
or talking
isn't going to have the legs to continue to a 12-month
thing.
It just doesn't have that.
I think it's going to be. I'm looking forward to. Dan Slott was on Word Balloon recently, and I like Dan Slott when he's speaking. He's a lovely guy, and you know. You listen to it, he's got a lot of experience. He actually was saying that he thinks that, he was quite open. He's saying what they learnt was they changed everything all at once when they shouldn't have, basically, is what he was saying. He's saying it's good to have a new character. It's good to do a swap out, you know, do this and that. The problem is they kind of did it to their whole hand. And it's hurt them because, like, there's a lack of familiarity. And, like, we can talk all day long about diversity, which I believe in, but I think what they've done is they've bet too heavily on one thing.
Yeah, and I get that, but I wouldn't be adverse to them just rebooting this whole thing. Just stop, start again from scratch.
Do you mean like the whole Marvel Universe?
Yeah, the entire thing.
Yeah, I don't think they will, though.
No, I think it's too big a job for them to do it.
Yeah,
but
it's too hard, almost.
But the idea is you could then start every title brand new.
Mm.
you know what works, you know what sells, you can bring in new characters, you can...
Yeah. Yeah.
There's literally no limit to what they can do.
I just think that sometimes what they need to do, and I don't know why they don't have the fucking brains, is you can have your classic characters and you can have your kind of like newer characters and your tangent characters and whatever you want to call them. I don't even know what you call them. You can have those titles as well. Like, have a more balanced hand. You know, like... That's what I would do if I was running it, and I wouldn't commit so heavily on these events like Secret Empire, which suck everything in. And it'd be like everyone knew 6 months ago, we knew the nose was against. We knew the public opinion was against Cap Hydra. You know, it's never been popular. It's always been a contentious storyline. Why would you keep betting into it? Why not make that event a 4-issue event? You know, why not cut that down so you can move on faster? Because you have the lead time. That's what I'm saying. If you know you're headed towards an iceberg, and these corporations are like big ships, okay? They're not as dexterous as someone like myself who's writing a series of books. If I see things aren't sparkling with the audience, it's very easy for me as a creator of something to move and adjust, you know, because I'm creating one property. But if you're a massive organization with a kilometre amount of titles, like 40 titles a month or whatever it is, it's harder to adjust. So if you know it's actually, oh, shit, Secret Empire is not looking too good. All our readers are hating it, blah, blah, blah. The feedback we're getting is all negative. Compress the event. Don't make it fucking 10 or 8 issues and a million tie-ins. Like, make it a smaller thing.
Yeah.
Like, move on. And that's what they haven't done. They've kept betting into a bad bet.
Mm.
I'm sorry to, you know, sort of break the bad news, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, they just keep doubling down on this.
Yeah.
And it's not paying off.
And, like, part of me, and I like Marvel, and I always hope they do well, part of me kind of has an emotion where I'm like, well, this is kind of on you guys. Don't put press conference releases out like, I'll be patient and wait.
No, I couldn't think of a worse thing to do.
There's my response. Fuck off.
I couldn't think of a worse thing to do than telling the audience what they should think.
Yeah, don't tell me. You've been trying to...
That's a terrible idea.
This is like, why don't they put out a press release saying you should like the Inhumans? Because I know that's what they've been trying to brainwash us into. But it's the same sort of thing. It's like, you're not going to convince anyone. Do you know what I mean? You just can't. At a certain point, the audience likes what the audience likes. It can be hard to predict. I understand that. Not everything is going to be a home run. But the signs have been there. Even as a comic, casual comic fan, the signs have been there for months about Secret Empire.
Yeah, and look, there's just a few things that you really can't mess around with.
Mm.
And... the Nazis winning World War II.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that's a touchy issue for a lot of people.
And rightly so.
Look, yeah. some segments of the population don't care. You can run with that story.
Sure.
It's not going to affect them.
But a lot.
But there are a lot of people that really do take offense.
A lot of people suffered and a lot of people were impacted.
Exactly. There's plenty of things you can change in history.
Mm.
No big deal.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not one of those things that you can muck around with
and
without consequences.
The whole, you know what offends me, actually? It offends maybe is maybe the wrong term, but it gets on my grade a little bit. They're so like, oh, but the Hydras aren't Nazi. It's like, but they're literally the Nazis in the fucking story. Like, you're calling them a different name.
They've been happy to run with the parallel that Hydras and Nazis are interchangeable for the last 40 years, but...
And they're suddenly like, oh, yeah, but this is not quite the Nazis, it's Hydra.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I don't quite see the difference.
Stop talking, Marvel. Stop releasing things in the press. It's not working.
Yeah. I noticed they released one of their PR guys and got a new PR guy on. I saw him bleeding cool. So he's got a nice job to do. What a fucking mess to walk into.
Oh, man, he's going to earn his money.
He is. I honestly think it's all quite fixable. I think, honestly, that, like, we're so used to reboots and everything that look how DC changed opinion with Rebirth. The DC were headed down the gurgler perception-wise before Rebirth, and they changed around quite quickly.
All of these companies can bounce back, and in 5 years' time, I'm sure we'll be looking back going, remember when Marvel screwed up royally?
Yeah,
when that happened? I'm glad it's back to normal.
It's like they say, like, I mean, you're sometimes two events away from a disaster, and they've sort of had those two events.
Yeah.
Look, we all know that I think we can all gather, by the end of Secret Empire, Cap's going to be redeemed, you know? So I don't know why they couldn't have compressed that storyline down a bit further, you know, to sort of get over the millennials, like, angst a little bit. Because obviously these people are buying comics. They're obviously customers at some level. I know there are some people out there who aren't buying the comics and aren't reading them, but certainly some are.
I mean, look, there's people that will buy and read these comics regardless. Whether they're offended, whether they're loving it,
yeah.
They've got a subscription.
It's me or Punisher, for example. I'm a sure bet.
Exactly. They've got a subscription. They love the character. They're going to see it through no matter what happens.
Bit of faith sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe in 10 episodes' time, it's going to be fine again. But
now, something I think, just to sort of... Well, we're going to talk about Secret Empire later, this exact issue later, but something I want to mention to you is we should really do Secret Empire the 70s... it's like a 3 or 4 issue series with Steve Englehart. I really want you to experience just how good that storytelling is and how more compressed it is and, frankly, how better it reads than this event. It's quite markedly different.
Mm.
Like, Steve Englehart was a great writer. He did a lot of Batman, or he did a run on Batman, which is very influential on the original 88 movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And has always been a big influence. His Captain America run, dude, it's very 70s, but it's very good. I really enjoy
his run on Cap. I've read...
Oh, you've read it, have you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, the Secret Empire stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's do it for the show review.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. So, look, I mean, that's our opinion here. Look, book burning is bad, guys, but I do understand your concerns. I do. I do feel for them a little bit.
Stop burning things.
Stop burning books. That's not helping anyone. It's not the way forward in a civilization.
And it's bad for the environment.
It's bad for the environment. That's a very good point, Stu. And, I mean, you can't wipe the digital file. If they could do that, hack in and do that to everyone's computers, I'd kind of be impressed.
Oh, go for it.
I know. I'd actually be like...
Make Marvel the next Sony.
Staggering sort of
go
like...
Go in, hack them, release
level
a
of
stuff.
Technology.
Do that.
Now, Stu, I've got here a little tidbit that I came across. It is the 80s video game Contra is getting a film adaptation. Now, are you familiar with this video game, Stu?
No.
I'll paint the picture for you. Imagine you're in the 80s. You're a kid in the 80s, like you're about 11 or 12. Predator's big, you know, Rocky's big, Rambo's big. Rambo
Why
and Predator.
Wouldn't they be? They're great.
Yeah. Well, pretty much that took the cover art of like Predator and Rambo and put it on an arcade game. It was like a shooter, like a side scroller.
Nice.
And it was absolutely, it was like balls to the wall fun, man. It was expensive as a kid and it was hard. And I was never quite rich enough to really get good at it. But it was one of those perennials at arcades. And it sort of summed up the American, like, you know, guts and gore, like that kind of like high testosterone. Everyone's a commando. Everyone's special forces. It was quite a cool game. Well, a Chinese company's acquired the property and are going to be doing a film adaptation, I pray to God is just really full on like cheesy. You know, they're the company that's behind, I think, things like Expendables and stuff like that.
Good.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what this needs to be. Though.
It does. It really needs to be. And like, I don't even
that over the top Sylvester Stallone style action. Flick.
Yeah, exactly. And don't put in old guys. Put in young guys. Put in like. Guys who are just pumped up, you know, like jacked right up, put the headbands on and go fucking crazy. I hope they probably said it in the 80s. Probably. Maybe an 80s pastiche kind of thing.
Who knows?
I don't know what the options are, but look, it was an interesting one. I just came across it tonight just before the show. But turning to some big news, Stu, and this is actually big news. This broke, I think, probably yesterday, that Hellboy is being rebooted with an R-rated version. David Harbour from Stranger Things is attached. As Hellboy?
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed the first two Hellboy movies.
Oh, me too.
I think if you've read the Hellboy comics...
I've read a fair chunk.
A lot of people that have read the comics don't particularly love this adaptation.
Oh, of the movies?
The movies.
Del Toro? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I think the reason is Del Toro's got a very specific story of
style. He went his own direction with it, for sure.
And, yeah, he's done his own thing, and that's not what's in the comics.
Yeah, the comics are... I mean, I've read only the sort of, like, probably the first half of the comics.
I haven't read much, but it is a darker, more gothic kind of comic.
Mm. Yeah, no, true.
And you don't really get that gothic vibe looking at Del Toro's...
No, he goes in his own direction, that's for sure.
He does. I really enjoyed it. And
yeah,
I think
I
Ron Perlman was
liked
amazing
Ron
as well.
Ron Perlman was fantastic.
He was great.
Like, I loved... You know what the best thing about the Hellboy movies was? Hellboy, I thought. I thought he was fantastic as Hellboy. His character is similar in the comics. The actual comics, from what I've read, and I've read about the first half, I'd say they're pretty... They're weirdly obscure and very sort of baroque, very esoteric.
Yeah.
A lot of witchcraft and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apparently this trailer, this movie, R-rated and it's going in more of a horror direction. The fact that it's R-rated means nothing to me. It's not an R-rated comic.
I don't like the idea that they're releasing the idea that it's R-rated before they've shot a single frame, before
Dude,
they've...
the comics aren't unrated. They're general audience. You know?
No, and see, if the rating fits the story,
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah.
If this story needs to be R-rated,
but what are we going to see? Tits in Hellboy? We don't need it.
Exactly. Like, right, if they're going to make it more violent, a little more horror-themed, and it happens to be an R-rated movie, yeah, I'm very okay with that.
Well, I think that's the direction they're probably heading in.
But the fact that they're announcing it's going to be R before they've made it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're now going to write a movie that's set to be an R-rated film.
Mike Mignola's attached. Mike Mignola is one of the writers. He's the creator of Hellboy, and he's one of the writers of the script.
Yeah.
So at least I like to see the creator involved.
Yeah, that's always a good sign for the character.
Yeah, I really do. Look, I'm interested in seeing, and shout out to, again, to David Hopkins on Hideous Energy. He's the biggest Hellboy fan, man. He is a hardcore Hellboy fan. And he was saying, his analogy was that basically everyone had their hopes on Hellboy 3, which I never thought was going to happen. Hellboy 3's been talked about for years. I never had any belief that was
going to happen. Yeah, and the person who's been driving that talk is Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I know, and he's an actor.
I would love to see a Hellboy 3 with Ron Perlman in it.
But it was never going to happen. Apparently
it came close a couple times, but never really.
I read today Del Toro apparently got knocked back because he wanted a bigger budget for 3, and the studio knocked him back, and that's where he officially then walked away. That was something I read today.
I would have given him that money.
Me too.
Hellboy sells.
I think the Hellboy movies probably deserved a third one. I really think they deserved it.
I would have liked to see them close out like a trilogy.
Yeah, me too. But as time went on and Rob Perlman's getting older and Del Toro's got so many other projects and it's a major movie, it seemed less and less likely as time went on.
Yeah. I mean, but having said that, Ron Perlman does tours of hospitals dressed as Hellboy. Like, he puts on that full-on makeup and all that gear.
Yeah.
Hours worth of makeup in the chair, and he's happy to do it. He loves that character.
Yeah, he's a good man, and you're right. But this really tells me that David Harbour, who is coming in to play Hellboy, he's got big shoes to fill. Because Ron Perlman was very good.
Yeah. He is Hellboy for me.
Mm. Do you think David Harbour, who was nominated for Cable and I couldn't see it, has he got the Hellboy vibe for you?
I mean, I don't know. I think it really depends on the director for me.
I've only seen him in Stranger Things. I've seen him in nothing else. He played the cop in Stranger Things. Yeah. I wasn't like fucking blown away, like give this guy an Oscar.
No, he's...
I was okay. He was good, I guess.
He's good,
like,
but he's not by nowhere near the best part of Stranger Things.
No, yeah, I was like, this guy's going to be Cable? Are we fucking serious? Like Brad Pitt, I got fucking excited. You might remember. Do you remember my reaction with Brad Pitt?
Yeah, I remember you... foaming over there. Yeah,
I was like on that fucking news like 24/7. But then they eventually got Josh Brolin, who I'm very happy with.
Absolutely.
And that came out of nowhere. I think he fits it so much more. This David Harbour, I mean, God bless him. I hope it does well, but it's going to be challenging.
Yeah, and like I said, it really depends on the director. If you've got a good director, they can get the best out of these guys.
They have named the director. He's the same guy who did the Descent. The director is named.
Oh, really?
I don't know what else he's done, but he's done The Descent, like horror movie. He's done some other stuff. He did, you know, various bits and pieces. He's got a reasonable resume. They've got a fairly sort of strong team. The creator's involved. They've got a decent director. They're going in this more horror-based direction, which I can see with Hellboy. But I don't know. I guess we're living in a different age to when the first Hellboy movies came out. It wouldn't surprise me if they're trying to create some sort of a cinematic universe with the BRPD stuff. You know, and I don't know. Like, I liked pretty much everything in the first two Hellboy movies. I liked Abe Sapien, and I liked a lot of it. You know, I thought it was pretty cool. And I thought visually, for the time, it really stood up. I thought visually that both Hellboy movies were very, very interesting. I knew nothing about Hellboy.
I really enjoyed, like, the steampunky kind of vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very cool.
That's why I'm saying they've got big shoes to fill, because I can't imagine abandoning that aesthetic that much. I can imagine them leaning into that even harder if they're going to go in a horror direction. Steampunk's a pretty good fit.
Look, I'm disappointed that Del Toro is not doing...
Oh, I'm very disappointed.
Even if he had to change Ron Perlman up, which was never going to happen...
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that Del Toro is not attached. Guillermo
del Toro is such a talented director
that
I'm very disappointed he's not attached. But, dude, he was never going to be.
And his style just fits for me.
His sensibility.
Yeah.
I really believe the Hobbit movies lost a lot when they lost Del Toro as director. I think his Hobbit would have been very, very interesting.
It would have been very cool, yeah.
Yeah, it was a real shame. Del Toro always has so many things on his schedule, and so many of his movies don't pan out due to financing and stuff. It's a real shame.
Mm.
But he's got some stuff that's really cool as well. So, look, he's gone. He's obviously not going to be coming back to the franchise, so I guess we can only wait and see. I mean, it's not the first property to be. Look at Spider-Man. How many times has that been rebooted?
Well, yeah.
And, you know.
So does Batman as well.
And Batman.
Numerous iterations of Batman.
Two perfect, perfect examples.
Yeah.
Hellboy is a really cool character. And they got the character of Hellboy right. People might say that they're not like the comics. They got the character of Hellboy pretty right.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when you read Hellboy, when I was reading it, I hadn't read it. I read almost no Hellboy at all before the movies. When you read the Hellboy comic, you hear the Hellboy movie guy in the voice and vice versa.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest compliments you can give is when you're reading a comic that you've read for years and all of a sudden the movies come out and you can hear the actor's voice.
You can still hear it, yeah.
Like for me, RDJ is now Iron Man.
Oh, hell yeah.
Forever.
Hell
whenever I'm reading RDJ, his voice is in my head as Iron Man now.
Totally, man. Yeah. No, he's almost perfect. I think they write him really well, and that fraction really got nailed that when that his comic was coming out at the same time as the first movie.
Yeah.
That was the character. There was Symbius, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It just worked perfectly.
Now, Stu, another little trailer dropped. Did you watch the It trailer? Because I did.
I did. Yeah, this is the second trailer.
This is freaking me out, man. I'm digging this stuff. Like I'm generally on the edge of my seat watching these trailers. Can David get through it, sort of thing? Because I'm freaking out, man. I'm freaking out. Like
I'm quite enjoying a horror film at the moment. There's a bunch of horror films out there. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan.
Huge aficionado. I'm definitely not, but yeah.
But I'm definitely going to see this movie.
I'm seeing it. It
looks
like,
brilliant. It looks terrifying. I love it.
Again, I saw someone was commenting on how that they called the similarity to Stranger Things Slide. I don't agree at all. I've read it. And like, there's a huge, huge connection between the concept of those young kids getting to all the mischief they do and what's happened in the Stranger Things. That was kind of like one of the central thrusts of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Like, just the basic idea of them riding on a bicycle is getting into shit that's way over their head.
I think the other thing is, like, one of the lead characters is the guy from Stranger Things as well.
Oh, is he? Oh, I thought he looked
one of the kids, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
I think that's where they're drawing a lot of these parallels. Okay. It's the same kid leading a group of four young children.
Which is like
into a monster's lair that lives under the ground. It's kind of.
It's creepier though, man.
There's a lot of parallels.
Dude, it's creepier, dude. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It gets really bad. Because the thing with it that I remember, if I remember correctly, basically the action takes place in flashback but also in the present. So stuff that happened to them in the past really heavily affects the kids. So that you flash forward like 20 years and they're very much changed as adults and still have to go back to that place.
Yeah.
So they haven't conquered it as kids. They're in fact damaged by it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like the tale isn't over. It's a pretty cool book. I remember reading it and I was probably a little too young and it really impacted on me. And also, Stu, a little Wikipedia article. You might recall last show we were talking about Stranger Things, The It in the 90s, and I just mentioned it was a miniseries.
Yeah, you're right.
I know. Thank you. And I went to Wikipedia. I've never been happier to read a Wikipedia article. It wasn't edited by David Finn either. I was straight off the thing. I almost took a screenshot. I was so happy. You know why I remember that? Because
you want to know some trivia with It?
Yeah.
So Pennywise,
the clown, yeah.
The clown, the evilest looking thing I've ever seen, is played by Bill Skarsgård.
Oh, really? In the movie?
Yeah, son of Stellan Skarsgård.
Who's Stellan Skarsgård?
He's in the Marvel Universe. He's the Thor's...
The doctor.
Doctor.
The professor. Eric Selvig or whatever.
Eric Selvig.
Oh, okay, cool. So his son is playing the clown.
His son is Pennywise, the...
Jesus.
One of the creepiest bloody things
I've ever seen. Did you see that thing that was happening like earlier this year where clowns were turning up in the States and stuff?
I was
like,
loving that news.
Was that related to It sort of viral marketing?
No, that was just people being just weird and creepy.
Wow. Did you hear the stuff about some guys went out and were like trashing them and stuff? Like they were going out with guns and stuff?
There's a bit
stuff.
Of vigilante justice going on.
I dug it heavily.
I didn't think you'd mind that one.
Like that's the kind of shit that I think our inner cities need. Like, I'm being serious, man. Like,
no, but yeah, for a while there were clowns that would... People would just wear a clown costume and then go and stand in the middle of parks.
Just to freak people out.
Holding like a balloon.
So they were basically... They weren't employed by... Because I thought it was a bit of It viral marketing going on, but it was just people like doing their own viral marketing.
No, basically. I think it happened the other way around. It kind of saw that and went, let's get a first trailer out super quickly to piggyback on this momentum.
Got it.
Because that first trailer came out a little too early, I think. Everyone kind of forgot about it by the time this trailer came out.
Yeah, this was a good trailer. Do you think that those people, though, who are doing that are a little bit, like, messed up in the head? Because to me, that's not normal.
Well, I think...
I mean, why would you do that?
Most of it was just copycat. People trying to get on the news, you know? Put on a clown suit.
Go
and stand somewhere creepy and hold a knife or a bat.
Far out.
But there were probably some pretty sinister, evil people that did this to start with.
I'm thinking of, like, pedophiles and stuff. Like, those kind of creeps.
I'm thinking more like just muggers. People that would stab someone to take their wallet kind of thing. That
yeah. It's freaky, man.
Yeah.
Just the thought of it. Thought of it's evil. I give credit to the people who went out to beat these people up and take them down and stuff because I think they're performing a service. Like, I really do, man, because it was in the UK.
I would love to just call up mates and go, hey, there's this dickhead dressed as a clown in my neighbourhood.
We're going to lynch this clown.
Let's just grab some bats and go for a walk at night. Just hope we run into this
dickhead.
Imagine
you were walking back from work. Like, when we came home tonight, it was dark outside, and I'm moving quickly in the cold. If you came across just a clown with a balloon and a fucking...
Oh, if he came out of the shadows and you didn't see him until you were, like, close?
Freak me the fuck out.
Absolutely.
So you think it's a bit of that. There's people who are just, like, thinking, oh, we're going to play mess with people's minds.
I feel like a lot of it is people that are just let's just be a dick and try to scare the,
well,
scare
much
the
like,
crap out of people walking
Much
home.
Like a break and entry, then you enter a whole new world of fucking risk.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I've always said that if you're going to break into someone's house, be prepared for the ultimate fucking sanction. No, I have. Like,
I love that you start this with, if you want to break into someone's house. Like, it's a normal thing to do.
People do it, man. People do it and they cry when the guy comes out with a fucking gun or a fucking spiked bat. Be prepared for that sanction if you're breaking into someone's house. That's my point.
You heard about that story where someone broke into a house, tripped over a power cord and sued the house?
Yeah, it's bullshit. Like, that should be laughed out of court and that guy should be thrown in jail. Seriously. He's lucky I wasn't the judge on that occasion.
It's lucky you weren't the homeowner.
Yeah, man. Seriously. My dad always used to have under his bed, like, spiked bat. I remember as a kid. I was like, this is hardcore.
It's lucky you've been born with adamantium claws.
It made an impact on me, I can tell you that much. Now, anyway.
just a disclaimer, you were not beaten as a child.
No, it wasn't against me. It wasn't
a physical impact on you as a child.
Potential home invaders. It made me sleep better at night thinking that.
Yeah, but when you said my dad had a bat, it made an impact on me.
Very good over this. You're very quick tonight, I see. Anyway, look, so Stu, I watched from last week, I've watched The American Gods pilot in episode 2.
Yeah, I watched episode 2.
Now, Stu, I think we may have a divergence of opinion here. I'm going to go on record as saying this is probably the show I'm most looking forward to. I can't fucking believe how good it is. I'm loving this show. I'm giving this show 10 out of 10, man.
Where are you? I am enjoying the show. I'm really liking it. I would recommend you go out and watch it.
Definitely.
I do have some problems.
Yep.
And I think the problems are something that you're not seeing at all because you've read the books.
Yeah, I've read the book, yeah. It is very similar to the book. I mean, at least in terms of... it is really very similar to the book.
Yeah, but we're just... I don't want to spoil episode 2 for those that haven't seen it. It's only just come out.
Sure.
But you go through an entire episode meeting 4 or 5 new characters who we get interactions with. We see them talking and dealing with other people.
We can talk about the show. It's been out in the States for a couple of days. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, but we don't get any names.
Well, you got media. So the Lucy Ball. See, every...
No, but we never got the word media.
Oh, well, it comes up.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You know that character. You know what its potential is. You know that character's name. We don't get any
But
of
you're
that.
Being led down the path at the moment. This is what Odin does to Shadow.
Well, that's the other thing. We don't know Odin.
Well, he was called Wotan in this.
He's called Wednesday.
No. The Slavic god. You know what? You know when they went...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but they haven't said it in the show.
No, the Slavic god called him Wotan. Called him Wotan when he came into the house and when he threw something at him. He did call him Wotan.
Yeah, but that's not Odin.
It is, dude. I'm telling you.
No. I know Wotan is Odin.
Yeah.
If I hadn't read the books, Wotan is just a random word.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Wotan does not mean anything to me if I hadn't read the books.
Well, Wotan in mythology is the same as Odin.
Yeah, and I know that. I've read this. You know that. You've read the book.
Yeah, but anyone who knows anything about
But if you were to go to your neighbour's house and say, who is Wotan?
They might know it. They might know it. If they're familiar with Norse mythology, they would probably know
You have
it.
To be pretty...
Yeah, maybe or maybe not. Maybe or maybe not. I agree.
You're getting into some pretty obscure stuff here.
True. Look, if you said Odin, I reckon most people now would get it because of the Thor movie.
Oh, absolutely. Look, Odin is well known. Wotan
is a lot less known because he's a Germanic god that filtered through to the Scandinavia when it became Odin. Basically.
It's kind of a mistranslation along the way.
Yeah, it's like the root of Odin is Wotan, basically. That's literally what it is.
Yeah, which came from Woden as well. It's gone through three
incarnations. Or from Wednesday, which connects to Wednesday, which is what he calls himself.
Exactly. But if you ask people where we got the name Wednesday from, nobody knows that.
Some would know it. If you know Norse myth, you'll know it. Most people wouldn't know
it. If you polled 100 random people, you're lucky to get one.
Yeah, probably.
You would be lucky
to get one. It's a vast minority, I agree. But the point of the story of what I'm trying to say is, in the book American Gods by Neil Gaiman, which I recommend everyone read, you can read that before the show. You can honestly, it doesn't... What basically the story is, he guides him through the world, and there is a resolution, but it's not plot-heavy. It really is a guided tour of a world. That's why there's so much depth.
Yeah, but the problem is, for the casual viewer, you do not know that there is another world. None of that has been explained. There has been not a single character that's been fleshed out at this point.
Well, okay.
We are still in. We don't know what's happening.
No, I agree.
I'm willing to go along for the ride. At the moment, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
But if they do this for another two episodes, I'm going to lose interest because I don't have anything to hold on to.
Oh, dude, I strongly recommend you keep your fingers to the mast.
And that's the difference between someone that's read the book like you and knows there's so much potential.
Yeah.
And someone like me that's watching this for the first time and going...
Where am I?
The way you talk about it, I know it's going to get good.
Yeah.
But if I didn't know you and I hadn't
Can't imagine
read,
that world.
If I hadn't read
What a tragedy that world would be for you to not know me.
I'd be a lot safer.
Oh, my Lord.
But if I didn't read up on this stuff for the show...
No, I hear you.
This is something that would eventually send me off.
Okay. But just for the sake of our conversation for the show, can I give you the 10-cent pitch? Okay.
As long as it's not going to spoil things.
Well, it spoils things in the sense that they're all gods. Okay, that's the whole concept of the show.
Yeah, but see, the basic concept. I didn't get that from the show.
Well, okay, but let me explain media to you at least. Okay, so media is the personification of... Have you read Sandman? Okay, you know death is like one of the endless.
Yeah.
Okay, media is the same thing. She's the personification of media that's been around... Since whenever media started, Victorian London.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So when she was saying, I've been around, she's not one of the old gods like Odin is, like Wednesday is from olden times. Like she's more modern, but media has been around for, say, 200 or 300 years. So she's been around the block a few times and she's wary of the very newest god, which is the internet god. The guy who was in the car?
Yeah.
He's the most newest kind of version of a god, and they sometimes don't quite understand the powers that they have, you know, because they're just freshly born, whereas she's been around for a while, and he's been around forever. He's like one of the originals.
I really wish they'd had any of this in the show.
Yeah, you'd like a bit more depth. I don't disagree with you. When I started reading the book for the first time, I actually had a tough time at the very beginning, and it was only the fact it was Neil Gaiman that made me read like into the second chapter.
Exactly.
We're only in about the second chapter of the book.
I think this TV show needs to pick up and quickly.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Because it's almost lost me.
Really?
It's not going to lose me because I know how you talk about it.
Yeah, you're digging in sort of thing.
Yeah, like I'm going to persist through 3 or 4 episodes of crap to get to something that's great.
Yeah.
Not that this is bad TV.
No, it's confusing for you.
It's confusing as hell and there's very little story.
Let me explain one thing to you, which I struggled with myself in the book, because Neil Gaiman himself doesn't spell it all out for you originally either. It's quite a bleak... And then it comes into full focus as the book wears on.
Yeah, but see, I didn't mind that. Like, when you look back at, like, Legion, we had no fucking clue what was going on in the first episode.
Oh, true. It was a little nightmare.
But you get into episode 2 and they start
they dumb it down
pieces of... Yeah. yes, some of this is in your mind, some of this is real, and you go, oh, okay, now I've got to figure out what's what.
As a cautionary tale, I have heard from the guys on Collider, the people have seen the first four episodes, it's still not all fully explained. So don't, you know, it's explained more, but it's still very much a guided tour. Let me explain something to you to give you the basic pitch, okay? Just something I want you to have in your mind. Do you remember in the first scene of the movie where the Vikings go to America? They hit America. Do you remember that? You remember in the very first scene of the whole thing, they get all the way to America and they land and the arrows
come down.
Kill someone. And then they basically, their ship is, there's no wind, so they can't sail away. Do you remember that they sacrifice an eye and they sacrifice a couple of people?
Yeah, to Odin.
To Odin, yeah. And when they leave, the statue of Odin falls down onto the ground, okay? That's the beginning of Odin in America. And when, wherever his name is, Erik Leifson or whatever, he's supposedly the Viking who did discover America. They think that a Viking did actually get there. And one of the first Vikings, they said when he came to America, like 100 years later, the cult was there ready for him. Odin was waiting for him. See, the story of American gods is basically a story of immigrants. It's the immigrants, which are the gods themselves, the people with their beliefs, transferring to the new world, which is America. So, like, Odin in Norway or fucking wherever in Scandinavia is a different Odin to Wednesday. See, when people transfer their country, like the people on the ship with who are praying to Anansi, you know, that god, the spider god, they're coming, they're slaves, and they're coming, they're bringing their beliefs, and they're introducing that belief to America, and it becomes a new version of the god. So that's what basically happens.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to give you the explanation.
It's not the concepts that I don't enjoy, but what I'm not enjoying is the fact that I'm learning more about this show from you than I am from actually watching the show.
Dude, I dig your position because I would be the same. I just thought I'd give you that idea just to give you a sort of like a, you know, sort of just give you the kind of, that's the kind of dumbed down version that's in the show. That's
explanation. Most of this I'm getting because, like, I watch the show and then go, what the fuck just happened, and start Googling it.
Yeah.
And I go looking things up and fall down rabbit holes.
I'll lend you the book if you want to read the book.
I mean, I think it's definitely worth a read.
It's a fantastic
book. But I'm going to wait until after this TV show.
Watch the show. And the show, I think, has more content in it than the book, because I think Neil Gaiman's writing a sequel, and I believe he added some of the material that will be in the sequel into the show.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? So there's a bit more depth in the show than in the book in some bits. To be honest, I don't remember all the beats of the book, but I remember the start very well. And I remember that I was like, what is this? Because I wasn't like super convinced by the first chapter. And then it gradually wound a spell on me, you know. I'm a huge fan of Norse mythology anyway, so I'm a sucker for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, since doing this, I've gone and read up on, you know, all the names of the weeks and how we got all of them. And
oh, okay. Oh,
like, that's all Norse mythology, all of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's cool links there. And
yeah.
Like, I knew more Norse mythology before I saw Thor and read Thor and, you know, it's interesting, but it does mean that I have to go and do homework to enjoy a show.
True.
And that is not a good sign for me that a show is good if it's standing up on its own legs.
I get you. I'm at that zone, man, where, I mean, I am a Neil Gaiman fanatic and I've been waiting for this show forever.
Yeah, look, I'm a Neil Gaiman fan. I haven't read this book, but I've read a lot of his other stuff.
Yeah, this is
all of his other TV.
It's almost funny that you haven't read this one because this is like considered,
I know.
Like,
it seems to be a weird hole.
Have you read Sandman?
Yes, I have.
Okay, because he deals with some of the you know, there's certain arcs in Sandman where he deals with the Norse gods?
Yeah.
He deals with this in a different way, but it's the same thing. One of my favorite bits of Sandman that I always remember is, do you remember the bit where he's come back from hell and there's like a contest going on and then all the gods come to him, including like the cat god and, you know, Bast and Odin's there. Mm-hmm. And Odin has that little crystal ball where he watches the world because he's trying to work out how to beat Ragnarok.
Yeah, yeah.
That has always been, that was one of the parts when I was reading Sandman where I was like, this is fucking next stellar shit. Like, Neil Gaiman was so far ahead of the curve. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think there really is a lot here. I'm just going to keep going. I mean, I'll do a solo review if I have to, but I so hope we keep going on this one, Stu, because...
Oh, look, I'm going to be watching the next couple episodes. I will dig in.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's because I know that...
Yeah.
People that have read the book rave about the book.
Hmm.
So I think it's worth following.
definitely.
But I think it's also going to lose a lot of audience if it doesn't do something different soon.
I will be interested to see what the audience thinks of it, because so far, from my memory, it's a I wouldn't say it's like word for word the book, but it's very similar. You know what I mean? Like, in beats and stuff. Like,
yeah, I just feel like there's... We need a little something more in terms of...
I think you need a crash
either
course.
Either a story or a character's name or something to be...
A bit more solid.
Giving us clues as to something we can hold on to. Because right now we've just got a bunch of what seems like completely unrelated small stories that have been put together featuring some weird people.
Yeah, true. They haven't even said they're gods.
Exactly. They kind of implied it.
Yeah.
Again, because I've spoken to you, I know that they're gods.
Sure.
That's never explicitly said.
Yeah. You want the... You kind of get more of a feeling that there's the info dump. You want the
there's just
dump.
A bunch of mythical people. But they don't seem connected in any way.
But they're not really, other than they're gods. They're all from different walks of life. And what...
Well, yes, but like ultimately, it's going to be a war of old versus new kind of thing. Like they've...
Sort of. That's
Wednesday's
what
kind
trying
of
to, yeah, he's
pushing
trying to
that at
yeah,
the moment.
Yeah. He's trying to shore up his bases, basically.
Yeah, and you kind of get that sense that Wednesday's got a plan, but you have no idea in what context. And I think that's frustrating more than anything else.
True. It will be interesting to see how it all works out, because I don't actually 100% remember it very well. Like, as the book wore on, I got more and more caught in the spell. And I would say this is not super plot heavy. There is a plot to it. It's more of a road trip. I think there's... I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this show, though, they leave quite a lot open, because I think they're trying to do multiple seasons. They've got big ambitions for this show. So
they should. It's got a great cast. It looks really well
done.
He's
really good, isn't he? It's Wednesday, the lead guy. And I like the guy playing Shadow, too.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, no, I really like the cast. Okay, well, look, I think we've covered American Gods. Is it something we'll return to? I think we'll have it as a kind of like constant sort of something to discuss, because I think it's good conversation filler. And I think it's something we can bounce back and forth on. Now, Stu, I want to put a little bit of a mention out there. One of my favorite comics is Lazarus by Greg Rucka with Michael Lark on art.
Yeah.
I read Lazarus at the moment is entering a sort of hiatus, and then Greg Rucka is going to do miniseries with different artists. Lazarus 26 came out a few weeks ago. What I'd done was I'd read about half of it in bed, falling asleep. Loved it, fallen asleep. And then I thought I'd read it. I was like, I've read it. And I'd already, you know, I just, in my mind, it was like, tick. I knew there was a miniseries coming. But I was lying in bed the other night, and it was just after I finished reading Nightfall. And I was like, that feeling of just exhaustion. I was like, I want to read something as a palate cleanser. And I thought, what happened in the last episode of Lazarus? I was like sitting there thinking. And I went to my iPad, to my Comixology app, and it was like halfway through. And I'm like, oh, great. Dave, I can see what happened. You fell asleep. Like
classic
an idiot.
Dave, yeah.
So I read the second half, and kind of hilariously, there's a huge reveal, and it's like a massive ending. Like, I won't give it away anyway, other than it's like a complete, like, what the fuck just happened sort of, like, reveal and action sequence and yada, yada, yada. It's full on, like, the last 10 pages, the 10 pages I didn't read. And I finished reading it, and I was like, I'd be fucking shocked. And because I love Lazarus, I'm with a passion. It's one of my favorite comics. And I was just like, and I tweeted Greg Rucka and said, blah, 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 loved it. Only just read it, thought I'd finished it. And I put hashtag delayed shock. And he liked my tweet and went, oh, yeah. It's like, well done, idiot.
Well done, idiot.
He's a very nice guy. But it was just so funny because let me tell you, I can't think of a comic in sort of modern times. He builds the world so convincingly with the artist as well. Like it's a full, it's dystopian future. It's so full, but also inside this full world, the personal dynamics and characters are so livable and breathable.
Mm.
So it's a combination of both. It's not just great world building. It's great world building with these really rich characters that really make you care. And more than once during this read of 26 issues, Greg Rucka has just pulled the rug out from under you, and you just feel completely unsteady. It's a really great comic. I mean, people say it's good. I would say it's great. I'm going to reach out to Greg Rucka to see if we can get him on the Signal of Doom, and we'll definitely talk some Lazarus.
Sure.
If we do get him on, we're talking as if we've got him. We don't have him just yet, folks, but if we do get him, we will give him all the hospitality we can. And well, you know, there's so many questions I'd love to ask the man, but it was just so funny, Stu, that I did a classic, like, fall asleep halfway through, And I was just like, how did it end? It was like, question mark. And then, oh, turns out I didn't quite finish it.
Falling asleep halfway through movies, TV shows, comics, the lot.
Oh,
your equal opportunity.
I've had the iPad fall on my nose. Big time. Big time. That's why I probably have gone, I'm getting the sways going, the mini sleeps going. And I'm like, you know, just like, I've had it land on my nose. I'm like, how that didn't break my nose, I don't know.
Wow. That's not easy to do.
Well, it's easy for me. It's something I can do pretty easily. Now, Stu, so turning to comics of the week.
Yeah, we've got a few here.
We had a good mixed week. I'll kick off with All New Guardians of the Galaxy. Stu, pick this one for you. You're the cosmic guy over there. Jerry Duggan, one of my all-time favorite writers, writes Deadpool for a long time now, and he wrote Uncanny Avengers. I'm a big fan of his writing. I thought this was slick. I gave it 3.5 out of 5, and I enjoyed it. I thought it captured the ambience of the movie. I think it was shooting for that in its design. I mean, I thought it was a very readable comic.
It was definitely made to imitate the movie and the kind of MCU version of it. I think it was well done. I like the Drax is getting more human now.
He's a pacifist.
Yeah, he's a pacifist.
Yeah, which was interesting.
Except against walls.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you this. I swear by Jerry Duggan as a writer. He only came to my notice when he started doing Deadpool out of Marvel Now. I'd never even heard of him, to be honest. His writing for Marvel has been top draw. He is a very, very talented guy. He's, in fact, someone that I'd love to have on the show. I regularly tweet him about stuff like Deadpool. He is a gifted writer. Mm-hmm. He comes from a comedy background. And I think he'd get the comedic beats mixed in with sort of his comedy, but he also has some pretty deep issues of Deadpool as well. He knows how to explore character as well as, and I think writing a team book of Guardians is a challenge.
Yeah.
But he's just come off Uncanny Avengers where he did a really good job too, with sort of a mixed Avengers Unity squad. I give this 3.5, I could give it 4, whatever. I think it's a great starting point. I would hand this to a kid who has watched Guardians 2 and loved it. I would hand them a copy of this comic. I reckon they'd probably like it.
Yeah, look, it's a clever time with the movies to have number one coming out now.
Yep.
I'm giving it 8 out of 10.
That's high marks.
I quite enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
And I give it the official Signal of Doom stamp of approval for Jerry Duggan as well. Now, Stu, unfortunately, for all the controversy of Secret Empire Free Comic Book Day, I don't believe either of us actually got a copy.
No, neither of us could get our hands on a copy of the free Comic Book Day version of Secret Empire.
One of these pricks who birthed it could have sent us a copy.
You can buy a physical copy online for about $8 now because people are buying them. Fuck to
these
burn.
Pricks. Fuck these pricks. Like, seriously, like, is that even legal? Can you do that, I guess? I guess you can do it to anything, can't you, on eBay. You can put whatever you want on eBay.
Yeah, you can sell anything as long as someone's willing to pay the price.
So just the scarcity, it just drives the price up straight away. I guess it is legal, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not living in a dictatorship.
No, once you get it free from the comic book store, it's yours to do with as you please. You can sell it, you can burn it.
I wouldn't spend $8 on it, though. Like, seriously.
No, $8
is a lot of money to spend.
There's a small insert with the new Spider-Man kind of preview, which would have been cool.
What do you mean? Is it the Spider-Man event with Miles Morales and Peter Parker, or what is it?
No, it's a new spin-off of a Spider-Man main story.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's a new title, Spectacular Spider-Man, I think it's called.
Oh, I have vaguely heard about this.
The new title that's coming out.
So good. Actually, I'm interested in that title.
A little insert of a preview, which was there, which people were reading it for and saying, it's really good.
Stu, I was flying. I was in Hong Kong. I had an excuse. Where were you on Free Comic Book Day? Catching up on Norse mythology, it seems.
I was learning what Tuesday came from.
Do you know? I don't.
I do know, actually.
Who? Where does it come from?
The god was called Tu, who was...
Seriously?
A Norse god who was the king before Odin.
Odin nixed him.
It's kind of murky as to who was the real king.
Right, okay.
But he was putting Fenris, the wolf god.
Oh, okay.
He chained him up with the dwarven chain and he got his hand bitten off by Fenris.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, Tu.
You don't hear much of him.
You don't hear much of it, except Tuesday, every day.
Tuesday!
Yeah, well done, Tuesday. And then Wednesday...
Tuesday's not too bad.
Wednesday, we know. Thursday, it was Thor.
Oh, yeah.
Friday is Freya.
Yeah, Thor's wife. Odin's wife.
Yeah, Odin's wife.
Who's Saturday?
Oh, who knows? Weekends don't count.
Sunday?
Weekends don't count. Monday's the moon.
The sun? the sun.
Who knows?
Yeah, that's how they come up with it. Sun. Day.
Yeah, weekends don't count.
Weekends don't count.
You're a pretty B-list guy if you can't even get a weekday. Come on.
Friday's a good one. Good for Freya to get Friday.
Yeah,
Friday's a good one. Thank God it's Friday.
Everyone loves Freya.
Yeah, she's cool. Who plays her in the movie? It's the chick from Ransom. What's her name? You know, the actress? She was pretty fucking hot, really. She's older now, but she's smoking.
Russo, isn't it?
Yeah, I've always actually had a bit of a thing for her. Actually had a bit of a thing for her. I'll just repeat for listeners out there because they didn't pick it up first time round.
You don't want to miss that one.
I just want to make my intentions. I like to deal at open hand at times, you know. Anyway, turning to... So we can't really give a review of Secret Empire free comic book day issue.
No.
I believe
go out and get a free one if you can. Yeah. I would recommend not spending money.
Can you still... Like, if you turn up to King's and they hadn't run out, is it still free?
I think if they've got stuff that didn't go on the day...
But surely that would sell through, you would think.
Well, it's free. They're just giving it away.
But you know the comic stores, like King's, they actually have to buy them from Marvel. Do you realise that the comics aren't actually free to the stores?
Yeah, but the idea is it's a promotional thing. It gets people in the store. They spend money on other things.
There's a hilarious thing on Facebook. I think it was in Iowa. An article, probably on Bleeding Cool, it said two different stores in Iowa with two very different approaches to free comic book day. And this one store gives you the biggest rant you'll ever see. Don't bother coming early. There's no point. There's no sales. We don't have parking. If there's any complaints from any residents, we're shutting the whole thing down. Like, it was just like, we hate free comic book day. Because we will have some, and he had like some in like, you know, full caps. We'll have some free comics, but like, don't come expecting too much. And like, it was this huge rant, sort of like, and we're doing no sales. It was almost like, we're going to double our prices. It was just so odd. It was a real insight into like some of the comic book store owners I remember from like the 90s
I don't get it. It's
real pricks, you know?
It's almost a weird culture with comic book store owners.
Yeah, so unfortunately some other Simpsons guy.
Some of them are brilliant. They know their customers.
The people at King's are fantastic. You know,
You're in Sydney and you've got a chance,
go to King's.
It's a fantastic store to go to.
You can get
virtually anything there.
It's a beautiful store, professionally run, great staff. They're an example of how to do it right.
Exactly.
But I can think of
they know their clientele and how to make a store that appeals.
But the ugly side is I think it's a lot less there now because of how the audience has sort of changed, but it is still there. And these guys in fucking Iowa sure fucking fit the bill. Like, I remember being in Comic Kingdom, and I'll name and shame them. Comic Kingdom, the guy was so rude to me. I'll tell you this story, Stu. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I'm freshly in Sydney. I've been in Sydney, like, just come up from Tassie. I liked my comics. One of my first things I wanted to do was find a comic book store. King's... I didn't even know existed at the time, okay?
Yep.
But I did know Comic Kingdom because I'd been up in Sydney on holidays and been to Comic Kingdom a couple of times. So I knew the location. Went there and I wasn't like hardcore like into it, but I had a very fringe kind of like knowledge of comics, and I picked up a few titles, you know? Like I knew what I was doing, but I had no idea of the whole bigger, wider world of it all.
Sure.
I picked up like JLA. Anyway, got into Comic Kingdom first time ever. Couldn't believe the prices, and the downstairs section was just a mess. But I was like, oh, well, it's a comic book store. And I went up to the guy, and I'm getting Justice League of America, or like JLA with Grant Morrison, which is the hot title at the time. And basically my question was this. It was such a simple question. I said to him, oh, yada, 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 I'll pick this up. I said, can I get down like a standing order list to get this monthly, you know?
Yeah.
That was the question. He proceeded to pick the comic up in front of me, hold it up to the sort of the audience and go, yeah, sure. I'll put it behind this every single time you come in and you can ask me for it every time. And he put it and like on the wall, he had some sort of Death of Superman comic and he kind of made a big deal about putting it behind the wall and then going, are you happy now? And I was just like... I was like seriously standing there with my mouth kind of open. I was embarrassed, not even sure what this guy's problem was.
So you went into your store and said, hi, can I spend money with you every month?
Can I buy this and can I
Can I spend more money?
Yeah. And I was like...
And his response was, go away.
He was just so weird. And that was one of about three encounters I had with this guy over the course of, you know... a short period of time that made me like go from like loving the fact there was this store to going, there has to be another store. And that's how I found King's Comics.
I mean, I've never used Comet Kingdom. I've never been.
Oh, they're terrible. They're absolutely terrible.
It's a shame because they're a block and a half away from King's.
They're overpriced.
Right in the center of Sydney.
They're overpriced. They're ramshackle. Like I haven't been in there. Maybe they've changed, but I've not been back in many, many years. I did go back. I did the classic. I'm never going in again. But I did break it on one day when I wanted this Hulk figure, which is still out there in my cabinet, and they didn't have it at King's for some reason. I can't remember why. And so I've done the walk of shame, and I've picked up this figure, and then I've just exited the store like you wouldn't believe. Like, let's pretend this didn't happen. But he had the. I remember being. Actually, I was in there one other time with a mate of mine. We went in there for free comic book day after going to King's, and he was doing the. We're not running any sales. Like, everything's full price. And I was like, you guys are just... I remember thinking, you guys just don't get it. Like, this is... If you run a conservative sale on a day like this, you'll make money.
Yeah.
You know? You lose by pushing people out of your store. This is the day where you should be putting on your A1 best performance.
Yep.
You're getting casuals coming into the store who never come to your store normally. You know?
Yeah, exactly. This is driving customers to your store that are maybe only on the fringes of being interested in this...
Yeah, very fringes. And
idea.
We all know how addictive comics are. If you can go very quickly from being a fringe dweller to really digging comics. It's quite a quick transition.
Yeah, I read somewhere that if you consider yourself a comic book collector, on average they have about 5,000 issues.
Jeepers.
Total, between online purchases and in-store purchases, you've got about 5,000 titles.
Okay.
And, like, that's your average collector. That's what they say an average collector has when it comes to comic books.
Yeah.
If 50 people come into your store and maybe one of them has the potential to be one of these collectors, that's a lot of money for your store.
It's a lot of cash. I agree. Yeah.
Why not?
Anyway, let's turning away from that. I don't know how we got into that topic. But now, Stu, did you get a chance to read Injustice 1? Because I didn't.
I haven't for this week. I've got Injustice 1 through 5 now.
1 through 5. Okay, well...
there is a sale on Comixology at the moment. They're only 99 cents.
I'll grab it after the show. I'll grab it after the show and we can talk about it next
week.
It's
a great cheap buy.
Because I know Tom Taylor, who writes All New Wolverine, has come back to writing that, I believe. Because he wrote a large chunk of the first Injustice.
Nice.
Because it's tied into the game. I love the game. I can't wait. Now, Stu, what did you think of Eternal Empire issue 1? I thought it was interesting, stylish.
It was a little light on for me. I wasn't a huge fan.
No, it was. How would you describe the story? It was a strange story. It was very muted.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Mm. So it's essentially about a girl who's imprisoned as a slave laborer.
She's definitely a slave laborer. Yeah,
and she kind of escapes through this snowstorm.
She runs off into a blizzard, basically.
Yeah, and you kind of get the sense that there's some magic in this.
And
universe.
She's having visions.
Yeah, she's not quite sure what they are when she first sees them. It's a whole new thing for her.
Mm.
But she escapes, makes it through this blizzard, finds herself traveling for days across fields different...
Into
woods. And eventually she finds herself in this clearing and gets confronted by this other character who we, you know, get introduced from the last panel.
He's got fire powers.
Yeah, he's kind of got fire coming out of his hands.
Now, here's a question. In the very first page or first scene...
Mm-hmm.
I found the art was kind of like nice to look at, but it was all very samey. Like it was very much one design.
Yeah, it felt a little overly simplistic to me.
Was she the same character that was at the start of the comic?
I got the feeling that the very start of the comic was like a flashback, like 150 years before.
Oh, okay.
I got the feeling it was very different.
Right, so they're not the same character. Because at first I thought it was, and I thought that woman who was a ruler was reduced to a slave, but I don't think it was. Maybe it's a descendant of hers. Because it seemed like there was going to be a bit of interracial breeding of some kind, or interspecies breeding. That's what it seemed like the first scene was setting up.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. It was interesting. I wouldn't say it was anything more than that.
No, I mean, it's the first issue in a completely new universe for them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could go somewhere, but after one issue, it's very hard to tell.
Very hard to tell.
And this issue didn't grab me enough for me to want to go back.
To me, I was like, it's interesting, but a bit slight, I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, at least we tried, Stu, and we're going to keep trying, and we are going to make more of an effort to cover some image books.
It's not just DC and Marvel out there. There are some other really great...
Oh, hell yeah.
Great publishing houses that have a lot of good work out there.
IDW, like Image, Dark Horse. They all are produce some cool stuff. So,
there's some great stuff out there.
Yeah, no, and I think we'll broaden our horizons a little bit and try a few different things. We won't just go with the classics that we know. Like, we won't just go with your Brubakers and Ruckers who are writing an image.
I'm always open to try something new. You never know what you're going to find.
Exactly. Now, Stu, turning to Trade of the Week. It was a big read. Nightfall Volume 1.
It was a massive read, 600-odd pages.
That's huge.
But this is the easiest 600 pages that I've had to read.
It was the most enjoyable 600 I've read in a long time.
Especially that first half.
Yeah, the lead up to Bane breaking.
I absolutely loved it.
Oh, man, I dug it heavily. To give the basic pitch to readers in case they don't know, basically the pitch is this. The character of Bane from Santa Prisca spots... Or learns of Gotham City, and he learns that Batman rules Gotham City. And
so this is like the intro of Bane.
Yes. Yeah.
The first we've ever seen him.
Exactly. And he's obsessed with breaking Batman and becoming like the king of Gotham.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, in Gotham, Batman is struggling with flu-like symptoms and exhaustion. We spoke with Chuck Dixon about that last week, how they leaned into that. And Batman is just gradually, he's kind of losing his grip. On reality, almost.
Yeah, he's been burning the candle at both ends for too long. He's been spending all night as Batman and all day as Bruce Wayne. And he's on the edge. He's been pushed there with illness as well as just fatigue. And
it's like a psychological illness as well, or symptomatic, or psychosomatic, whatever you call it. Like, they're doing tests on him and they're like, you seem okay, but he's not okay. He's struggling.
Exactly.
He's burnt out, basically.
He's just burnt out. He needs to take like a month off.
But he puts in a big effort.
But he keeps pushing through. And Bane shows up just at the worst possible time.
And Bane is, interestingly enough, he's not just a strong man. He's very much an analyst. And he can see that Batman is not at his best.
For most of this, it was this cold, calculating Bane that I really loved reading about.
He was good, yeah.
He was controlling everything from behind the scenes. He was in charge for the entire way through this book.
He releases all of basically the most dangerous inmates out of Arkham, which plagues Batman and plunges the city into chaos.
The first thing he does is, let's see what Batman can do. I'm not going to run in and attack this enemy until I know what he can do, what he's capable of.
Yep.
So he basically puts Batman through a gauntlet.
Exactly.
He smashes open Arkham, gets out all the big hitters.
Joker, Scarecrow, Mad Hatter.
Riddler.
How about when Riddler gets the Venom? he's so shit, and he gets the Venom. Like, Riddler is an interesting character, but he's not a strong man by any means. He's an irritant more than anything, really.
Yeah, but he's got enough sway in the criminal community that he can kind of pull things together.
His henchmen hate him, though.
His henchmen hate him.
Like, they feel like they've been lumped.
Let's just do stuff. Let's just not like write notes to each other. Let's just do stuff.
And so basically that gauntlet is what really reduces Batman down bit by bit by bit.
Yeah, and in the first half of this trade, you see Batman go from one episode to the next.
Mm.
He finally, you know, defeats some kind of small fry villain.
Yep.
Ventriloquist or the Mad Hatter.
But he's taking more hits than he normally would.
Exactly, but he's a little slower and he's getting hit a couple more times and...
Yeah.
You know, he's dead on his feet, you know, stumbling through these comics.
He's really struggling. Like, he'll go into his house and go into, like, Wayne Manor and just collapse on the bed.
Yeah.
Just, like, fully, like, just bang.
Yeah.
Just fully clothed. Like, he even forgets to take his uniform off when he's up in the mansion.
Breaks his own golden rule and wears the cape and cowl upstairs. And
he's very weakened, isn't he? And as Chuck was saying, there's an issue where he actually falls asleep while he's, like, on watch.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate in him surrendering his normal instincts and predatory instincts.
Exactly. You know? Batman's kind of made a name as someone that's able to push past his own limits.
Yeah.
Which makes him more than human.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how he can compete on this level with these superheroes.
Yeah.
He doesn't give in to this the fear that humans have or the need to breathe. And when he's underwater, he can kind of hold back these...
And don't get me wrong, Reed, he's not the like a sort of weak little baby in this comic. He's still manning up like you wouldn't believe. Yeah, he's pushing himself like to levels that are just crazy. It's like if he was in a basketball team, he's carrying the team on his shoulders, isn't he? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking nuts. Now, so basically what happens then is Bane gets to a point where I think Joker and Scarecrow really push Batman to the limit with their little partnership. if you recall. Like, so that's one of the last ones that he faces, like, after putting various people, like Joker and Scarecrow go pretty close.
Yeah, so he gets close to being able to put both of them away.
But yeah.
Ultimately, they both escape, so they're still out there.
They're still out there. And so that's at a cost. And then is that when, and because constantly the Falcon's, like, over them as well, and, like...
Yeah, Robin's kind of on the trail of these guys.
Yeah.
He's aware that there's a... The bird is watching him.
Yeah, he's kind of up to date on it, Robin, actually. He's got a...
Yeah, Robin's a little more clued in, and he's trying to get Bruce,
mm.
you know, on his side and saying there's a bigger problem here. Mm. Someone's pulling the strings and...
And Batman is being an absolute bastard to Tim Drake.
Batman's not having much of it.
He's just fully...
As far as Batman's concerned, there's people on the loose, people are in trouble. He's got to get on the streets and the front line and save these guys.
And Robin's just like, stay at home. He's like, stay at home, stay in the car.
It's too dangerous for you. I can't let you.
Robin is pretty cool, but he is very much a cipher. Like, he's trying to help, but it's like he just doesn't have it in him.
He is, but Batman's still got that hang up of, you know, the last Robin that didn't go so well.
And how about when he's beating up on the Joker? And he's yelling out, Jason Todd. I'm like, what's happened to Secret Identities here? We're just like screaming fucking names out. Like, he's like, Robin, Jason Todd. Yeah. And he's just like wailing on Joker big time.
While he's just pummeling his face in.
Yeah, maybe Joker got brain damage and didn't remember that. Like, but I think with Joker, there's always a thing like he's so fucking loopy that it doesn't really matter if he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman. There's an element of Joker that's so random. Batman.
I think I thought the Joker knew that Jason Todd was Jason after he died.
Probably, but how could he not work it out? Jason Todd was Bruce Wayne's ward, like Dick Grayson was.
Well, yeah, but there's no direct link there. Kind of,
I suppose so. Yeah. Yeah, look, it was funny though that he was just yelling.
It's always a pretty thinly veiled secret. Yeah, it was like all these superheroes. It's not great.
True. I just love that he was just yelling the name out. Like, he was out of it by that point.
He was so out of it.
And that was deep into it. That was deep into the
trade. Deep into it, just before the fall.
I've got the omnibus here, and let me tell you, the omnibus was a big read, man. Like,
oh, it's amazing.
When I got to, I love the whole thing. When I got to, was flying to Hong Kong, that's where I pushed close to where pretty much probably two-thirds points where Bane actually does eventually fight him.
Yeah.
And breaks him in a very full... And to be honest, Bane breaks him pretty easily.
Well, I mean, he sends his three henchmen, Trog, Zombie, and Bird after him first. Batman takes all three of them on one after another.
Twice in a row, doesn't he?
And at the end, yeah, he's struggling to stand, and Bane walks up and is just...
He comes... What I love about
Bane... Two of them are fighting. Batman's putting up a fight.
He puts up a fight, but it's almost like he's punch drunk. And Bane just takes him apart.
Yeah, it's very similar to what we saw in Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, true.
When Batman does go up against Bane for the first time, and he's putting up a fight, but it doesn't seem to really be affecting Bane.
And he's like fully like, even at the end, Batman's still like, go to hell. Like, he's still like...
When he's lying there bloodied and broken.
He's not a weak baby in this. He's just a guy who's just taken on too much.
Yeah.
Like, this is where Superman, you know? Like,
that is something that's always in the back of my mind whenever I'm reading this stuff. It's like... Just call in a friend.
But
like,
I think at this point, in fairness to the story, Batman wasn't calling in any friends. He didn't even want Alfred helping him. He was like cursing Alfred out. Like, and he didn't want any help from Tim Drake.
No.
How about though when they're fighting and I'm just trying to remember what I was going to say, but basically just the scene, that's it. When Bane appears in Wayne Manor and Alfred's just on the ground, like bloodied, and just that feeling of like, it's ripped away from you, the veneer. It's
absolute dread, isn't it?
Yeah. He just like...
Bruce Wayne goes back to the place where he feels the safest in the world.
Yeah.
And he can finally let his guard down an inch.
Yep, exactly.
After this, you know, couple of days of just pure terror.
It's Joker and Scarecrow just going fucking nuts.
Yeah, exactly. And he's at the very end of his rope and all of a sudden he sees Alfred just lying passed out on the floor.
Who only pages ago had been in conversation, so it was a surprise to the reader as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you just see this towering... Hulk of Bane standing over him. It's
I thought Doug Munch and Chuck Dixon worked so well together like a fucking tag team.
Mm.
Like it'd go from a Batman issue. This is what I love comics. It went from a Batman issue that would end on a cliffhanger, and that cliffhanger would be in the next issue of Detective. Like it really flowed on beautifully.
It did, yeah.
And we were saying this recently, how Batman and the Flash did that. This whole comic, it maintained this awesomeness between Detective and Batman working in total cohesion. It was just like Chuck Dixon, Doug Munch operating at like top fucking level.
Yeah.
And it was so readable.
It was great.
Honestly, I don't know if you could give this to a kid, but anyone over the age of like 11, they would read this. I reckon you would become a huge Batman fan.
Oh, you would.
You would just be like...
I think the only problem is it's all downhill from here because it can't get much better than this.
Well, in fairness to Chuck and Doug Munch and Greg Rucker and all those guys, they maintain the quality through the 90s.
Yeah.
They're very consistent.
I mean, this stuff is...
This is peak Batman,
though,
man.
This is some of the best comic book I've ever read, let alone Batman, let alone DC. It is some of the best comics I've ever read.
Yep. Now, I thought that, as you said, when he breaks him, man, don't you feel it?
Oh, that comic's such a good issue.
You feel your spine goes out. And how about
And then? You see him just standing over Bat at the end just saying, I've won. Gotham is mine. And you're like,
And then in the next issue, he just kicks him down the lights. He takes him up to like some, like on top of like some tower and just throws Batman just
throws
down.
Him off.
It's just full on.
It's so brutal.
And you just like...
Just when you think it's going to stop, like the pain has to end.
Yeah, yeah.
They go another page and it's another hit to the gut.
It's more punishment. And so... We got to that high level of drama, and then we had Jean Paul, who was sort of an understudy. He was Azrael, and very much an understudy. He very rapidly became a very crucial figure, and he's the person who Batman taps to become the new Batman, to wear the mantle.
So Jean Paul's gone through the training from the priesthood?
Saint-Dumas. It's an ancient order. Right. Like, it's a sect, basically, or a cult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Saint-Dumas kind of trains him to be this anti-hero kind of...
Well, they implant this thing called the Order in them, and so it's a way of learning stuff.
Yeah, so he's not always conscious of the things that he knows.
Yeah, he'll be basically sitting there, like I'm sitting here now, and suddenly he'll go into like some sort of like state, and he can suddenly transcribe like languages he didn't know he knew and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's also like when he's in combat, he's able to block punches and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, he goes to a whole new level. Yeah,
it comes into this, and he basically takes over from Batman his wishes.
Batman
says it should be this, and he actually says it shouldn't be Nightwing
because he's his own man now.
Yeah.
Big mistake, Bruce.
Big mistake.
Like, Bruce doesn't often make that kind of error where you're like, you fucked up, but you fucked up this time.
Yeah.
Because, let me tell you, Azrael, I didn't know much about him at all. And he seems like a bit of a weak little baby through much of the issues. Like, he's not much, and like Robin's guiding him around. As soon as he becomes Batman, this guy takes it up a notch, doesn't he? Like, this guy really takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
Like, to be fair to him, I'll say this about Azrael as Batman. He at least has a courage of his convictions. He has no doubt. He's super violent. He very much embodies a guy who's given the big role with big shoes to fill, and in my opinion, fills it. You know? He doesn't go the right way about it. He's way more violent. And, like, Robin's having, like, a fucking anxiety attack.
Yeah, Robin's not coping well.
Robin's struggling with his new boss. It's like the new boss has come in and, like, he is heaps violent. He's, like, screaming and shouting at the criminals, like, pummeling them. Like, Robin has to drag him away at least on one occasion. But I dug it, man. Like, you know, it was gripping.
It is. It's what you imagine Batman could be if he didn't have that moral compass.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, we miss Bruce all the more for it, is what I'm saying as well. Like, watching this kind of...
You're not reading this thinking, this could be Batman. I'm happy to read this as Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
You're constantly on edge. Like, it doesn't feel right to see Batman do these things.
And what makes it even weirder is the art is very much still like the Silver Age Batman. It looks like Batman. It looks like regular Batman. There's nothing really...
It does for the first part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he designs himself those... The claws.
It's so funny, isn't it? The claw. It's this wicked claw. And did you see what he just Trog's face, like blood's dripping off it and stuff?
Oh,
like,
it's amazing.
Yeah. And then poor old Robin comes across the somatics for the actual new suit. And he's like, oh, my Lord. Like, Robin, Tim Drake just can't cope with this level, can he?
No.
He's just not ready for this level of badassery.
And at one point, he does go to Nightwing. And he's like, I need help, but I can't ask you for help.
And Nightwing comes in because I think at this point, this is when Nightwing was still... very much his own guy, and in the Titans and stuff. This is the beginning of Nightwing coming into the Bat family because he becomes a big feature of Nightfall.
Yeah.
And look, Chuck did like 70 issues on him because a really big character again. Because previously, I think in the years prior, he'd been involved with the Titans and his relationship with Batman was frosty to say the least. But this is the beginning of Nightwing coming back into the Gotham Bloodhaven sort of arena. Yeah. And How about, did you notice Oracle as well? Like Batman.
Yeah, we get a little appearance of Oracle.
Oracle, and she says, because what happens is, listeners, Bruce's back is basically broken, snapped, and he's reduced to a wheelchair. And no real sense that he's going to recover.
Well, no, but he doesn't spend much time sitting around.
No,
he immediately notices another crime in his neighborhood.
Tim Drake's father gets kidnapped.
Yeah, so and he gets Alfred. Alfred also gets...
Yeah, yeah, and also the doctor assaulted. Who was helping him.
So the doctor and... Yeah, so the doctor and Tim Drake's dad get kidnapped.
And Bruce does engage in a bit of, like, melee with a couple of the security guards.
Yeah. So Bruce has Alfred just wheel him onto a plane to go chase these guys down.
And... Yeah, and Catwoman's on board.
Yeah, and Catwoman stows away.
Which is good to see.
Which is very cool.
Which leads into, and I mean, and pretty much there are two stories in The Diverge. He's on the trail of Tim Drake's father and leaves Tim Drake just basically a note, like, gone to rescue your father, bye.
Yeah,
and Tim,
back in a few days.
Tim Drake is really like, one more, like, you know, minus in his life, and he can't get together with his girlfriend. The new boss is terrible. Bruce has abandoned him. Tim Drake's really like,
and his dad's gone.
His dad's gone, and Tim Drake's just left, like, just sort of just cope, just deal.
Yeah, yeah. So brutal.
Bruce is very distant. Like, but did you notice how much more human Bruce was once he was in the chair? It was like. His own insanity, or, you know, the own fog he had over his emotions, that seemed to clear the second he was crippled. And back in the chair, he seemed to regain some sanity, I felt.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't as...
Yeah, he was kind of forced to rest for those few days.
Yeah, and...
And what little... Like, he's still worn out. Like, you saw him...
Yeah, he's got, like, cuts and stuff.
Yeah, but even in the chair, like, when he was trying to take out those couple of goons with guns...
Yeah.
Even with batarangs and, you know, the tools he's got, that was still a struggle for him.
And Barbara said to him, the chair's not easy. She said that to him on the mic. I like that as well. She's such a cool character, and she gets used a lot more as the 90s wear on, and, like, as this series wears on. This is where they really start to use her a lot. But I can't give enough credit to just Alan Grant's issues. I love Alan Grant. Alan Grant's issues, Scarecrow's not my favourite villain, especially solo. And I felt that, like, the three-issue run with the Scarecrow kind of slowed the momentum down a bit, although I did enjoy the art. But Scarecrow's not my favourite guy. Like, I'll always, like, prefer a Scarecrow one-shot over a Scarecrow long story because, you know, it just felt a little long. But then as soon as we flip back out of that back into Batman Detective, I was really – when we finish in that last image where – because then what happens is spoilers were just for a comic that came out in 1993. Azrael, or Batman, armors up like you wouldn't believe, doesn't he? Like this new version of Batman on the streets.
Yeah, he almost looks like what you'd expect.
A robot.
Iron Man crossed with barbed wire.
Yeah, yeah, it's vicious.
Like there's razor claws sticking out and he's got this full-on armor.
Harvey Bullock rates it. Bullock's like, yeah, he's not leaving anything at the table now. He's like really into it.
Yeah. Look, I'm... Comixology had a sale.
Yes.
So not only I picked up all three volumes of this,
fantastic,
about $18. It was so cheap,
man, and
it is well worth.
We will, as this show wears on, we'll do volume two and we'll do volume three. Like we'll gradually work our way through.
Yeah, eventually. It's not coming next week.
No, we're not coming next week.
I'm not reading 600 pages next week.
No, definitely not. We'll siphon it out. We'll let our brains digest. Because it's quite a long story. It covers a span of years. Because what happens at the end of this comic is basically Azrael, once he's, like, decimated, like Scarecrow, and he gets the armor on, he then goes and confronts Bane. And it really is a pretty classic battle.
Yeah, but it's interesting that Bane knows instantly that that's not Batman.
Oh, he knows that, yeah.
He knows that it's Jean-Paul.
Mm.
And when he gives the sign for Jean-Paul to come and attack him, he puts Batman now, but Batman's in inverted commas.
Inverted commas, yeah. And you see Gordon picks up
kind of
it,
picking up that, is that not actually Batman? What? Because they don't pick up that it's a different character.
And like Gordon, when he was talking, turned around expecting Batman to be gone, and he was still there.
Yeah, he's still
Jean-Paul was still
there
waiting, going, I thought you might have more to say. He's like, well, then he never stopped you before.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, come on, Gordon, are you a detective? Like, you never piece together that Bruce Wayne is Batman. Can you work out that this is a new guy? Like, doing a voice? One thing that blew me away was, I think it was really clever of them at first to show the mantle of the bat looked exactly the same. Like, his method was different, but his look was the same. And then gradually they show that first the gauntlet was a big sign that things were shaking up in
the
kingdom.
Yeah, the gauntlet and the claws and the... Yeah.
And then we get to that level. And it basically ends, if I recall correctly, where he annihilates Bane in a big fight and he breaks Bane. And then he basically, Robin's like, oh, well, you might have, I have my misgivings, but you did well there. And he basically just shoves Robin. He's like, yeah, thanks, kid, and just walks off. Yeah. And you get the impression he's a mixed up guy. He's a mixed up cat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to give this a perfect score. Fuck it.
Yeah, same. It's a 10.
It's great. You know, I think that this is an acclaimed story where, I mean, readers, listeners, everyone who loves Batman should read this comic. If you like Batman, read this, because you will get guys working at the top of their art craft, like Graham Nolan art. It really has some of the best art you'll see. Great storytelling. And even better, Stu, how much did you love that one comic blends into the other one? You know, like, so Detective goes straight into Batman. Batman goes straight into Detective. Like, it keeps the narrative spinning.
It feels like one cohesive novel.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does. If the sale's still going on, I'm not sure if it is.
But check it out. If it is on Comixology, the Bane Conquest
sale. Yeah, if it is, go and get it for $6 for a volume. It is so cheap. It is
Dude,
such
they're
a good
600
read.
Pages each, 600 plus pages each, you know, issue.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
It's 1 cent a page. That's value.
It's fantastic value. And I mean, it's great content too.
It's amazing.
This is prime Batman. And Stu, I'll be happy to tell you this. Batman through the 90s, this is the level it stays at. Where it's got these guys. Think of this. In about 97, 98, after having Dixon, Alan Grant, and Doug Munch, Greg Rucka comes in. Yeah, like, exactly. Come on. Like, I mean, how much crowder can this talent in this, exactly. in this, you know, pit get? Like,
and that was right around the time where they started getting the Batman animated series coming out on TV.
Yeah, and Batman animated series was coming around the same time.
Yeah. Because I remember getting action figures of Azrael at the time.
Yeah, as the Azbat, as it was called.
Yeah, I remember having that.
Because the next volume is Knight's Quest, is basically, I think, the story of Bruce trying to heal up while Azrael is Batman. And then the last one is basically Bruce Wayne coming back to reclaim the title.
Yeah.
So cool. It is very much like a heavyweight kind of vibe, isn't it?
Oh,
like
it is.
The belt, like Bruce loses the belt to Bane, and then Azrael just somehow cleans up.
Takes it back off Bane.
And he's a mixed up cat. That's the thing with Azrael. He's not that stable.
No, he's not.
And that, you know, comes back to haunt him, I think.
Yeah, and it goes against everything you know about Batman, who's one of the most stable characters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, doesn't lose his temper, rarely ever loses his temper.
Well, when he does, like, he fully, it's very kind of, like, directed. You know? Like, I can, you know, when Batman loses
his temper.
I feel
like he knows how to channel anger, but he doesn't just lose control.
No, he
doesn't. He's always in control, and he's always calculating.
I can barely think of a time, I'm sure it's happened, but I can barely think of an occasion where Bruce is just, like, going fucking crazy.
No, the only time I can think of is in this version when he's beating Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of snaps and starts yelling out Jason.
Elements of Dark Knight Returns when he goes after Joker. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces, but that's right at the end of his career. It's very rare, I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't basically happen. Like,
it's such a rare event.
This was such a good, though. I love the way, like, they obviously had the note, like, play into how tight he is. And didn't these writers do that? Like, Chuck and Doug Munch just really dug into it.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck said in the interview that he wasn't sure whether making him fall asleep was
just gold.
Pushing it too far.
But it's such a little thing, too. Like, it's not like they put it in neon, but he falls asleep and you're like, man, Batman's fallen asleep at the wheel. This is fucking going nuts.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
but
like,
it's such a casual thing that it's amazing how controlling they are when it comes to these tiny little details that pay such huge dividends for readers.
Well, we were talking about the Bat Summits with Chuck, and this must have been some Bat Summit, mustn't it have been? Can you imagine?
I would love to be there.
This Denny O'Neill, who was the editor, he was a famous writer as well. I mean, he wrote like classic Green Lantern, classic Question, classic, all sorts of stuff he wrote. He knew what he was doing, man. Putting these guys together in rooms and getting these kind of stories, it took some talent.
Oh, yeah.
No, so.
But it paid off. It paid off.
Look, Stu and I have given perfect scores, readers. I mean, we can't do more than that, can we, Stu?
We cannot. I've tried. It's a 10 out of 10. Go and get it, read.
Go get it now. Stu, and let me tell the listeners, I bought the Batman Nightfall Omnibus Volume 1. Stu, you've seen it down there. It is beautiful.
It is gorgeous.
It's supersized pages. I had to read the last 100 on my iPad. It was so funny when I got to the last 100. It was like at the end of a marathon. I just had my momentum. It was just carrying me around the last couple of laps. You know what I mean? Like, I burst through like the ticker tape with like sort of like that, like one finger up. Yeah, I've done it. But it's an effortless read for much of the comic.
It's a very easy read.
Yeah. Now, Stu, turning to next week, have you got any ideas of what we'd like to do for our next show? Should we do a Wonder Woman? I mean, where would you like to be?
You've actually suggested this to me in the past. Yes. How about JLA Justice?
Yes, fantastic. Yeah, okay, that's a really good one.
Yeah, I think that's...
I've never actually read it, so yeah.
Neither have I, but I've bought the trades a couple of weeks ago, so... Oh,
beautiful. That'd be a good one.
I'm ready to go.
I'm not sure. I know Alex Ross does the art. I don't know the writer off the top of my head, but I think that would be a really good one. It'd come out in probably mid-2000s.
It's probably been about 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. I know the basic pitch, I think, is like the villains start doing good things for the world. I think it's basically like Lex Luthor and all those.
Yeah, it's a weird reality swap type scenario.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that'd be really interesting.
So, yeah, JLA Justice is going to be...
JLA Justice next week?
Next week.
Well, Stu, this has been a huge episode. And any other tidbits for listeners? Obviously, everyone listen to Signal of Doom Facebook page, join up. Signal of Doom on Twitter and my Twitter handle at RedLantern2051. And please check out the Sunday series books. I've had a sale going on this week. The first book one and book three are both 99 cents. So if you enjoy like fast-paced action fantasy, now's the time to go grab them. I've had some really nice feedback over the last couple of weeks from a few different readers, and I'm always encouraging people. I'm working on the fourth one now.
Great. Go out and get some, boys.
Exactly.
Go out and get some Asante series. Go out and get some Nightfall.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff.
Go and hunt down Justice as well. I believe it's on Comixology. It's certainly available on trade. I've actually got like a big supersized Justice, which I've never read, so it'll be a good opportunity for me to crack out that hardcover.
Very nice.
It's only taken me like 10 years. I bought it like 10 years ago, and I've never actually read it. So, yeah, okay, look, we love you very much, and we will see you next episode.
See you then.